Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.
Ramel.
Okay. Yeah. No, that was on me. Yeah, that was on me, brother Chad. I pushed the wrong button, man. Yeah, I should have left it alone.
Okay.
Down at 50
on my side. Oh, yeah.
That a brand. You know. Funk ready.
Truly, truly die.
Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced. The air date of this episode is July 18th, 2023, and this here is episode 361 of season 7. So what we're talking about tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is what's on Black America's mind. We're having an open mic discussion about what is currently pissing off Black people in America with the triple K. One, ending up affirmative action. Two, the house Negro syndrome. Three, the dump, as in human shit, and the panties. Our missing Black girl, the agenda to destroy the Black family unit, and how can we as a people countermand this garbage, and if time allows, we're going to be discussing Sue, your colonized. Okay, I was a guest on the New Black Power Radio last night. And what they had did, their staff over there, that they had full of evidence of who were the slave owners of which president owned slaves. Okay, so what we got right here, as we're going to start this off right here, is that the presidents who owned slaves. Okay, George Washington, he was a major slave holder during and after his presidents. His will freed his slaves pending the death of his widow, though she freed them within a year of his death. As president, Washington oversaw the implementation of the 1787 Northwest Ordinance, which banned slavery north of the Ohio River. This was the first major restriction on the domestic expansion of slavery by the feds in U.S. history. Thomas Jefferson, another raping, slave-trading pedophile, had multiple enslaved children with enslaved women, Sally Hemings. Okay, and they're trying to say that she is likely the half-sister of his wife, Martha Wells Skelton. Despite being a lifelong slave owner, Jefferson routinely condemned the institution of slavery. See, folks, there's the hypocrisy right there. Okay, so already they're pissing on our heads, telling us it's right. And he attempted to restrict its expansion and advocated gradual emancipation. Now, that's very interesting, okay? As Lerone Bennett had pointed out in his writing, is that you could mortgage the slave, you could borrow on the slave, could rent the slave out. You see what I'm saying? And then I hate to say, this also meant that the slave owner could take his female slaves and rent them out as well, too, if you catch my drift. Okay. Now, with them being collateral, like on bank loans or mortgages that was on them, they could be forfeited as well, too. Okay. Interesting. All right. James Madison, he condemned occasionally the institution of slavery and opposed the international slave trade. Okay. So this here, yeah, this is right around 1804, you know, of the Haitian Revolution, okay, of what they did down there in Haiti. And Jefferson did put in legislation at the federal level to ban the importation of slaves, is because, as they were probably saying amongst themselves, is that, well, them niggas is born free and they're going to resist. But these brain dead Negroes that we got here already, we got them brain dead, and this is why we don't teach them how to read. Okay, yeah, so this holds a lot of water. Now, he vehemently opposed any attempts to restrict its domestic expansion. Now, this is James Madison. James Madison did not free his slaves during his lifetime or in his will. Okay, a dude named Paul Jennings, one of Madison's slaves, served him during his presidency and later published the first memoir of life in the White House. Okay, James Monroe. Okay, well, I was wondering why you got so many black folk named Madison, Jefferson, and Monroe. Okay, like the pedophile Thomas Jefferson, Monroe condemned the institution of slavery as evil and advocated its gradual end, but still owned many slaves throughout his entire adult life, freeing only one of them in his final days. Now, you see the hypocrisy right here, people, once again, pissing on our heads, telling us it's rain. So, you know, that there's something for your ass scratches and your ass bosses to figure that out. Okay, as president, he oversaw the Missouri Compromise, which admitted Missouri to the Union as a slave state in exchange for admitting Maine as a free state and banning slavery above the 36th parallel. Okay, Monroe supported sending freed slaves to the new country of Liberia, and its capital, Monrovia, is named after him. Okay, you see, once again, people, this is why the hashtag resurrection of the mental dead was created. Okay, now, you know them $20 bills you put off in your pocket?
Yeah.
With a picture of another raping, yes, sir, the picture of another raping, slave trading pedophile by the name of Andrew Jackson, man, who was the 7th president of the United States. Jackson owned many slaves. One controversy during his presidency was his reaction to anti-slavery tracts. During his campaign for the presidency, he faced criticism for being a slave trader. He did not free slaves in his work. So, you know, another hypocrite. You know what I'm saying? But we'll dwell more into that. Now, what's on our mind, people, about them ending affirmative action? Okay, so, you know, we did hashtag Joe Gibson, you know what I'm saying, Pianki, if you're out there, call in, you know, and what have you. All our haters, the number to call is 516-418-5996, and we still are waiting on you Biden supporters. Now, also, too, please add this phone number to your mobile plan if you're with Boost Mobile, and no, not Boost Mobile, I'm sorry, T-Mobile and
T-Mobile.
Metro. T-Mobile. Yeah, so you will not be charged for calling in, okay? And once again, the number to call in is 516-418-5996. Okay, now, with them killing affirmative action, okay, one of these politicians, Bobart, or whatever with this raggedy his name was.
From here.
Huh?
From Colorado.
Oh, because she was a senator from Colorado that sat up there and said, using Martin Luther King's words, let a person be judged by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. So this is her reasoning for her endorsement of ending affirmative action, but still it countermands what they was trying to do to make it quote-unquote equal. You see what I'm saying? So what had happened was is that they saw a lot of black – yeah, go ahead.
Affirmative action didn't benefit black people. Initially, it was supposed to benefit us, but
right.
Dr. Clark Anderson, who drafted the original affirmative action bill, said that it was going to be this all – that said they had gutted it and made it this all-inclusive bullshit. This is why everybody is benefiting from it but us. And the biggest beneficiary of it is white women.
Exactly. Okay. Gotcha. And then to mention the fact that you had a lot of Asian students who benefited from it greatly, it's because I recall in my college days, and particularly in California, you saw a huge Asian population. Now, let's look at a couple of generations later. Damn, boy, two generations, boy, that means I'm old as hell. Okay. Now, they took that knowledge back to China, back to their homeland country, shared it with their people. Now, look at how the Chinese has taken that information there and built up TikTok. Then going over there, you know, making these bullshit loans to African nations where they're structured where they cannot pay them back, and then they go on there and seize the land, okay? So where's the Barack Obama on that one? Where is all you inclusive individuals at on that one? Where's Kamala Harris at on that one? But once again, you know, we still have this house Negro syndrome that we have to deal with. When you look at Uncle Tim Scott, you know what I'm saying? Disgusting. And the cold part about it is that Uncle Tim Scott is so disgusting is that even Whoopi Goldberg, you know, was upset with him. But we know what she represents, you see. So that's like the pot calling the kettle black. Oh, the hypocrisy of it all, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. So what it is through this syndrome, you have the dumbing down, you see, and only figuring that the only way that he could, talking about black men, the only way he figured that he could prosper was to come out here and join the mainstream American society, as opposed to building up our own infrastructures, of which we did do with the Black Wall Street that they burned down. Well, what they did do with certain businesses and neighborhoods in the North, such as Chicago, Detroit, New York City, what happened. All right, then all of a sudden, you had other elements that come in. Oh, boy. Well. Okay. I think it's Brother Nas. Because, yeah, he definitely said that he was going to call in. So, oh, Brother Nas. Okay. All right. Okay, Brother Nas, Massage, just hang on. You know, after we do our introduction, and most definitely we were very, very interested in what you have to say. Okay. Now, with the syndrome, you know, that was beaten on to him, as we had stated many times, you know, over the years, you know, was the buck breaking, okay, the demasculization of the black male, pitting one against the other with that light skin, dark skin bullshit, you see what I'm saying, and whatnot. Then, of course, negotiating the black women, and no disrespect to our women, but we're bringing about hard, cold facts. Now, the dump, as in human shit, okay, and I will always refer to him as that, and the panties, okay, that governor of Florida, I'm saying that he wears women's underwear, and I'm saying he's a transvestite. He's a punk, okay. Now, as we know, the dump, you know, is getting ready to get slapped with a case, so they're playing all kind of shenanigans with that. They're probably going to handpick his jurors, and if I had, you know, me $20 in my pocket, I'd go over here to one of these casinos here in Las Vegas and say, hey, I'm betting $20 that the dump, as in human shit, will not be convicted, because they already got the stage set already. Also, too, our missing black girls that has been going on for quite a few years. You know, we have not been hearing anything on that. So hopefully some of these black politicians, you know, had their hearts in their hands.
Some more went missing in Ohio. Brother Aziz and our brethren that's in Ohio were talking about it. And then we had some go missing here in Colorado as well. I mean, pretty much every state, black women missing, black girls missing.
Okay. All right. So this is what I'm advocating on this platform. You know, gentlemen, ladies, and grow every sister that you can, you know, in self-defense classes, on a pistol range, you know, and have them set up to do a mutuale, you know what I'm saying? And,
yeah.
And sisters, please travel in groups. Have your weapons with you. You know what I'm saying? Snatch his eyes out. Snatch him by the balls. By any means necessary, kill his stinking ass and kick him off the planet. Okay? You know, the pepper spray. You know what I'm saying? Nunchucks. You know what I'm saying? Strike bars. You know what I mean? Knives. You see what I mean? And protect yourself by any means necessary. And once again, this is the agenda to destroy the black family unit. And then another thing we want to talk about is how can we as a people countermand this garbage that they are coming to us with? It's through the media. I mean, this bullshit that you see up here on TV, you know, shattering the black family unit. Now, also, too, I saw up there on Stinky Bird, okay, because Musk, you know, he's having some financial problems over there at Stinky Bird, okay, and he's a bore. So let his ship sink down in Frisco Bay, although Frisco Bay is only 90 feet deep, you know what I'm saying? I have no sympathy for his sorry ass. And then also, too, we're going to get with black social media as well, too, is because I'm hearing, you know, there's some on development, but still we got to research it because it might not be powers that that are favorable to us. And then also, too, and the way that we can countermand this garbage is that we are all we got, resurrection of the mental dead. That's why we created the hashtag here at Frontline Black News and Shabbat. Black Experience, which is a division of Frontline Black News, the hashtag resurrection of the mental dead. Now, let's see if we can get it monetized. Also, too, we're asking for a donation to keep this podcast up. We are expanding. We do have advertisement slots available, so definitely get in touch with Brother Cherry Krumer, Jesse Parrish, with that, who is running, you know, for Mayor of Denver, sorry that he lost, and that Johnston or whatever that sucker is, you know, who's looking like a ultra-conservative who became the mayor of Denver, he is not going to do shit for black people, so he's talking out the crack of his ass as well. Okay, so we're going to unmute our caller right here. He's got their hand up. Okay, you know, to our unknown caller, guest caller, your mic is unmuted. Okay, what's on your mind, and thank you for calling in.
Well, you're quite welcome, Chewbacca. I just want you to know I've kind of missed our little joust too long, and I'm glad that you opened my mic and allowed me to participate in your venture.
Yeah, we've been missing you, Sarge. You know what I'm saying? We was about to send out an SOS on you. Okay, Sarge, we know that you have a lot to say, sir.
Oh, you better believe it.
We have the show scheduled. Yeah, and we got this show scheduled for 2 hours and 35 minutes, so you know that's a lot of time. But we'll be going over, okay? Now, Sarge. Now, the thing is, I want to talk
now,
to
you know,
right about
now. You know that I'm, you know, I'm very succinct. Now, you know that I don't need a lot of time, but I get my points across. You know,
yeah,
I make
yes,
it very
sir.
Succinct.
Yes, sir. But the subject, there's three elements right here I want to go over you with right now, Sarge. One is, how do you feel about the ending of affirmative action? And then also, two, Sarge, what do you think about the U.S. presidents who own slaves? Now, guess what I got right here, Sarge? For the U.S. presidents that own slaves, you know, I got a list of them right here. But all right, Sarge. You got the floor.
Okay. First of all, I would just like you to know that if the Supreme
yes.
Court had ended affirmative action, then I would oppose such a Supreme Court decision because they didn't. What they did was to enforce the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment by ending in a
mm-hmm.
very narrowly focused decision. Again, let me stress this.
Uh-huh.
It was narrowly focused to the admissions policies at Harvard University in which they said race may not be used as a consideration in any criteria for admission to Harvard. That's what they said. They upheld the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment by ending racial categorization for purposes of admission to Harvard. So they did not end affirmative action. All affirmative action really means, other than that, is to mentor and help prepare someone to meet the qualifications for an opportunity. That's what affirmative action is. Okay? So they got rid of racial preferences. Yeah. Let's be clear on that. Let's be honest about that.
Yo,
now,
I got a question.
Okay.
I got a question for Sarge.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sarge, why are you always making excuses for them people, Sarge? You're always trying to...
Now, you're not dealing at all with what I said, are you? I noticed you're not dealing at all with what I just said. I said something very specific and very related to constitutional principles, which the Supreme Court is obligated to uphold, and you did not respond to it at all. You are asking me about my motives.
Yes.
Do you understand how disingenuous that is?
If you don't want to answer the question,
I'll answer the question. I just want to point it out before I do. My answer to you is I am not. I am upholding constitutional principles upon which black people regularly appeal to in the 60s and the 70s. That's what I'm doing. Civil rights are not just for black people. They are for every single American citizen. Period.
Sarge.
End of story.
Sarge.
That was the answer to your question. Now, don't say I didn't answer it. I did.
That's not true, Sarge.
Yeah, you did answer it. Go ahead, Paris.
Sarge, what are your thoughts on illegal immigrants being able to be police officers in your great state of Illinois?
I oppose every bit of it. I oppose every single policy that is extant right now with regard to illegal aliens. They ought to be deported, and if they're going to make a claim of asylum, they ought to make it at the first safe harbor they come to, which would be Mexico or Canada, or they should do it at a legal port of entry, period. They should not be allowed to do what they're doing.
Okay.
But this Biden administration is utterly corrupt, anti-American, and will not do its constitutional and governmental duty.
I got a question for you, too, Sarge. Let me ask him a question, Perry. Okay, my question to you, Sarge, is go ahead. You want to finish another question, Perry?
I was just going to tell Sarge that originally affirmative action was specifically for black people. Dr. Claude Anderson was responsible, one of the people that was responsible for drafting the first affirmative action legislation in this country. And it was originally for black people specifically. And then they went ahead and put in that broad, ambiguous language, minorities, people of color, and all of that, and watered it down. And now white women are the biggest beneficiary of affirmative action.
All right. When I was in Chicago and Illinois, I had a regular, long, and fruitful association with a well-known, you can look him on the web, you see his name. His name was Thomas F. Rosa. He was a well-known conservative columnist in Illinois. He had his own radio show. I would appear on his show regularly. And Mr. Rosa was appointed as the undersecretary to Richard Nixon, to Richard Nixon's Treasury Department. And in that capacity, he helped to create the first federal affirmative action program in the federal government. He helped to do it. Now, he said at the time it was intended to be temporary. He said he had no idea it would metastasize into the grotesque monster that it eventually did. But he said he was all for it when he first started because he believed it would be temporary. So, again, the first federal affirmative action program was started by Richard Nixon. Federal. Note the word I use.
Okay, I didn't
federal.
Know that. Thank you for bringing us to the table. Hold up, Sarge. Go ahead. Finish your statement.
All right, but I'm just saying that again, I am not against affirmative action. I want people to be prepared to meet the normal, legitimate standards for admission to any occupation or training or vocation that there is. But they must meet the legitimate standards. They cannot get racial points based on immutable characteristics of which no one else can qualify for. Anyone can be an athlete. Anyone can be a scholar. Anyone can be a member of a legacy family. Anybody can be all of you, be a musician. You can be all of those things. Anybody can be any one of those things. A disabled veteran. Only people with the right genes, which is Nazi-esque, qualify for certain privileges under racial preferences. That is why it was unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter whether or not, you know, again, whether or not they came up with affirmative action programs that were intended to be for black people or not. They are unconstitutional anytime they put anything in there for any racial group that is codified on genetics. And the Supreme Court simply upheld that principle.
Okay, hold on now, Sarge. Now, let me ask you a question. Now, how come they didn't feel this way when they were lynching black men and castrating them?
Because they were racist and women were not. Because there was racism that was predominant in the country, and people were not adhering to what the Constitution mandated. And now we got people saying, well, since they didn't do it back then, we don't need to do it today. And that's not true.
Okay, hold on, Sarge. Now, I've got two other questions to ask you, Sarge. Okay. All right, I think we got another unknown caller right there. Okay, feel free to punch one. But, Sarge, two questions I got to ask you. Okay, a family member of mine had asked me, man, since you worked all the city of Chicago, went and busted heads, thrown people in jail, used napkin holders to defend yourself, making your arrest.
I did not use a napkin holder in my capacity as a police officer ever, not once.
I see. Okay. All right. Now, tell us about that secret police station that they have over there, Sarge. I believe it's on the south side, man, you know, where they take, you know, the most
of the Commander Burge, right? Yeah, Commander Burge.
Yeah, okay, well, they will beat the suspects, man. You know, pretty much similar like what Mark Furman was emphasizing, you know, how they do things in the great city of Los Angeles, where they'll take five niggas. You see what I'm saying? You beat one, you beat the second one worse than you beat the first one. Then you beat the third one, man, and you beat them worse than you did the second one. Then you take the fourth one, who's going to tell you what you want to know, and the fifth one is going to confirm what you want to say. Now, don't get into the tactics of Los Angeles. Tell us about that spot, Sarge.
Chewbacca, you do realize what you are describing is criminal behavior, even if it's done by the police. You're not talking about anything that is allowed under any law in any state or the Constitution. So you're describing criminal behavior by criminals.
Yeah.
What do you do with criminals when you discover they're doing some criminal
stuff? It's inhumane and criminal. Right, Sarge. Let me ask you my question real quick.
Of the city of Chicago is because Chicago was the home of Al Capone for many, many years, as we all know. Chicago was built on corrupt cops, man.
What do we do about that, Chicago, when we discover police officers acting as criminals? What do we do with anyone who acts as a criminal?
Police is the police.
I'm going to read you something, Sarge.
You are describing criminal activity. Something that is not allowed under Illinois law. It's not even allowed under Chicago Police Department regulation. Say nothing of the law and the Constitution.
But there was this organization, Sarge, that says we want an immediate end to police brutality and murder of black people. We believe we can end police brutality in the black community by organizing black self-defense groups that are dedicated to defending our black community from racist police oppression and brutality. The Second Amendment to the Constitution that you always so are expounding, Sarge, the Constitution of the U.S. gives the right to bear arms. They therefore believe that all black people should arm themselves for self defense. Okay, so which means, Sarge, on this point right here, when they mm-hmm. tried to emphasize this to certain organization, they were classified as public enemy number one. And then that old senile bastard who used to be the governor of California, who became the 40th president by the name of Ronald Reagan, had signed into law in California called the Mulford Act. And based on what you're telling me, Sarge, that is in violation of the Second Amendment. Okay, the hypocrisy is beautiful, man. You know, I just read. You know what I'm saying? I'm ignorant. I don't know nothing. I'm stupid.
Well, wait a minute. You see, you know what I mean?
Can I ask him a question?
You know what I mean? Now, yeah, Shabaka, now, you know, you're hopping around to a lot of different subjects, and you're not focused on any one of them. We haven't yet been focused. Now you're talking about violations against the Second Amendment, of which the Biden is guilty of more than any other presidency I can recall in my lifetime. So, I mean, there are innumerable at every level of government throughout the United States. That is a separate issue from whether or not police officers are to be assumed to be engaging in criminal acts of brutality against criminal suspects or prisoners. That is a separate issue.
Okay,
I mean, can we focus on one thing at a time, please? Can we focus here?
Yes,
can we focus?
One question, and I would love for you to answer. What do you do when the police become the criminals?
Now, that's a difficult question. Now you put me on the spot with a question like that, because police officers are assumed to have the authority to do certain things, and they are assumed to not exceed that authority. When they are shown to be violating the authority that has been granted them, like our FBI is doing right now. Let's face it, that's what our FBI is doing. Clearly, in the persecution of Trump and many other people, the January 6th protesters and everything else, what we are supposed to do is go to another. And remember, this is a system of government with checks and balances all over the place. All over the place, okay. There's checks and balances. So if you have, say, police officers acting criminally in a jurisdiction, like, say, Chicago, well, you've got a gentleman or a person named the Attorney General who's going to be able to investigate it.
And if the Attorney General doesn't investigate it, because the Attorney General is either
corrupt or compromised, then you have a federal government with a civil rights division in the Department of Justice who can investigate violations of the constitutional law. So at every aspect in our government, you have checks and balances. Now, the key thing is to put people in those spots who have integrity and have a respect for the rule of law and will do what must be done to end it. That's the problem.
Okay.
Electing people with integrity and courage.
Okay, now my question to you.
Go ahead. Is responsible for enforcing it? Like, for example, here in Colorado, in Aurora, Colorado, there's a consent decree on Aurora Police Department for the murder of Elijah McClain and several other people, black people that were killed around the time of George Floyd murder. Who is in charge of the consent decree, and who enforces the consent decree?
Well, a consent decree is something that is – yeah, consent decree is an agreement by a governmental entity, usually local or state, conjunction usually with the federal government, and they agree to allow supervision in certain defined areas in which violations or improprieties are alleged to have occurred. And that is overseen usually – by some sort of federal magistrate or judge. That's the answer to the question. That's who oversees it.
Okay, who enforces it?
Okay.
Well, court orders enforce it. I mean, if it's a consent decree, that means both sides have agreed to abide by the rulings of the federal magistrate or the federal judge. And if they don't abide by it, then they are guilty of contempt of court, potentially. So that would be the enforcement mechanism if someone does not agree.
I got a question.
Go ahead, Romeo.
Okay, take this out, Sarge. Can you honestly say that the system, you said it has checks and balances and everything, But is it safe to say that the justice system itself leans towards persecuting black people just by the nature?
I wouldn't
of
say that necessarily, no. It could be, and it might not be. I think most of the time it isn't. I mean, it, sometimes it is, but most of the time it is.
How about the COINTELPRO thing? You know what I'm saying? And when
right.
basically they were, you know, when the CIA set up all them drug dealers and put them in a position to sell drugs and gave them guns and were bringing mm-hmm. the drugs into the country and at the same time passing bills to create more prisons. And, you know, the justice system got paid off all that. The CIA got paid off all that. The government got paid off all that, off the persecution of black people.
Right.
You know?
Well,
right.
Can you honestly say
that the government has your best intentions in mind?
Oh no, I'm never going to say that. That's why we have checks and balances. You never heard me say that.
Excuse me.
And I never will say that. In fact, the founding fathers, the people who wrote the Constitution, the framers of the Constitution, were fearful of government for precisely the reasons you are outlining. That is why they put so many systems of checks and balances in there, because they anticipated there would be corruption and wrongdoing in government.
They anticipated, or they're using that
yes,
as a cloak.
Yes, they anticipated it and
so
expected it to happen. Yes. That's why
so,
they limited the authority of
cloak.
All of these agencies. That's exactly why
they
did it.
Into the sea.
A lot of people find it hard to understand. They actually think federal government has unlimited power. And we could see now with what's going on here, like with the investigation of Joe Biden and everything else, Congress, we're beginning to see that's not necessarily so. They have a great deal of power, yes, because they are executives. And when you give an executive agency power to enforce things, you have to give it a lot of authority. But that doesn't mean they're the ultimate authority and they have all authority, because they don't. That's what it's up. We got a judiciary, you got a legislative branch, you got an executive branch. And then you have the people, which is the ultimate authority. And as you correctly point out, the people, when they recognize depredations and wrong, like in COINTELPRO, where the FBI, remember, what did I just say a little while ago about the FBI? The FBI was doing illegal surveillance of people, infiltrating illegally and all of them, and disrupting their legitimate constitutional rights. So we're talking about, again, we are talking about illegal activities by government entities. That is the most dangerous thing there is. I am with you when you're talking about dealing with that. But here's the problem.
You guys want to assume.
Wait a minute. What a lot of you guys want to do is you want to assume that's what government agents are doing, simply because there's a disparate result among black people, because we got this wildly disproportionate violent crime rate in the black community. And because the results, yes, they are disparate, but it's not like they're disparate for no reason whatsoever. No other community is as affected by violent crime as is the black community.
Because
now, we have to be honest about that, too.
Hold on. We got another caller, Sarge. I'm going to bring you back on. This person's got their hands up as well, too, so we're going to bring them into the conversation. Okay, we just unmuted your mic. Okay, what's your name and where are you calling from?
Greetings, this is Brother Warren, host of New Orleans Wake Up, one of the shows on Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us, Brother Warren.
I pride my show on confronting conservative talking points and like to expose the shallow ground that they stand on. I like to recommend a book by a sister. Her name is Carol Anderson. The book is called The Second, Race and Guns in a Fatally Unequal America. So she talks about the history of the Second Amendment and where that ultimately emanates from. And then I like to share with you a book that I often recommend about the Constitution, and it is called We the Elites, why the U.S. Constitution stirs the few. And we need to start tackling these conservative talking points because they're a distortion of history, and they basically are a perpetuation of white supremacy and to maintain white racist hierarchy is what a lot is. And they've recruited a lot of black people to serve as the face for these talking points. And so I'm very proud of my show for taking on. I'm going to do a show called Yes, White Privilege Does Exist. And I and a show called You Gotta Be Woke to Be Alive. So being woke is a good thing. All of these coined terms they try to say, we need to start shattering them and taking them and hit them on face to face.
That's right, Brother Warren.
Yeah, so when is this show scheduled? When is this show scheduled, Brother Warren? Because I'm going to make a note of it right now.
I'm going to try to, when I do shows, I'm going to be leaving out for Africa in about a week and a half. I'll be gone for the whole month of August. I'll be in Africa. But I'm going to do some shows the next few days, and I'm going to air them possibly in the evening. So we're looking at about around either 6 p.m. Central to 8 p.m. Central up in that time. I just haven't had the time to do a regular scheduled show because I move around a lot. But if you go to my archive show, you can hear me confront a lot of the talking points that are very weak. They're very weak. When anybody knows basic history and basic things, you can knock these things down with no time. Let me give you an example. Let me give you another talking point these people say. So slavery, right? Yes. Well, everybody was slaves. Everybody was slaves. So this is what I ask these people. I say, look, when did white slaves get emancipated in the United States? Give me the date and give me the legal act that was done to emancipate them. They can't answer that. I said, show me a slave narrative. Show me a slave narrative a white slave wrote about their miserable condition as a slave and escaping and running away and how their family being sold and how they're looking for their family members.
Joe Gibson is trolling the chat. He's talking about Brother Warren as an FBI informant.
You know what's stupid about that? An FBI informant blends in with the group, right? And then when they blend in with the group and say what everybody want to say, they encourage you to do something stupid to go get arrested. Like the fool at the January 6th, the fool at the January 6th white supremacist riot. A lot of them got tricked and fooled and all that mess.
We lost the anchor man. Hopefully the anchor man will call back in. Now, too, Brother Warren, we got Sarge with us right here, man, who is diametrically opposed to us. And also, too, Sarge, just letting you know that we got Joe Gibson in here, and we had Joe in here on the 4th of July, and we kind of roasted Joe a little bit. But also, too, Brother Warren, that Joe Gibson, he's making a statement here, sir, saying that you, Brother Warren, are an FBI informant, and I don't believe that. So please continue, Joe.
Yeah, that's my buddy. Joe Gibson, my buddy. Let me say something about a lot of the white people with blog talk shows. I really appreciate them because they do allow me into their forums. And you could tell many of them do want to learn to find out. But this is what I've noticed. They got a little handful of black so-called conservatives who go on their shows and encourage them to be more extreme. So let me give you an example. Let's say I'm talking about something on their platform, and they kind of understand a little bit. Then here comes the black conservative jumps on them for not being hard enough on black people. This is how crazy this mess is.
But you do have a lot of white people
that's nervous, they're afraid, they don't know what's happening, they want answers. And so I go on this show not to be provocative or to cause, but I be trying to explain to them what's going on. But see, what they're trying to hold on to is the significance of being a white person. They're trying to hold on to the idea. They want to be a white person to mean they can have a seat at the table or in the line in front of everybody else.
Uh-huh.
And that's what they're trying to hold on to. They're trying to hold on to that.
Yep.
Yep. And then on top of it, too, but, you know, but as you had pointed out there, too, Brother Warren, is that guys like Elders, Leo Terrell, Eric Adams, you know, they're paid to say that, man.
Talking about there's no such thing as racism, white supremacy, and you were giving him a whole clinic, and he was still in denial of it. I think his name was Joe or something.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think it was Joe. It's because he was on Joe's show, and then Joe, like he does us, was constantly stepping on him and what have you. But I appreciate Mr. Warren holding his ground, and he did come off, you know, on an intellectual flurry, and he did shut him down. It's because, you see, these guys, man, that they put up here, man, that when we come up here with the new black media, okay, they have those who are out to tear us down. They have those who cut us off. That's right insults right in here, man, you know, to our chat room. And then our chat room is open. I see they decide to let it work. Okay, so, folks, if you disagree with us, put all your insults right there. You can call in. It's because you're going to get roasted on here today. I was just letting Joe know it's 107 degrees here in Las Vegas, and I don't have any sunburn. Thanks for the melody.
But you know, Brother Shabaka, you know, it's like, look, I don't come in here with the intention to attempt to read anybody's mind unless whoever is speaking gives me some sort of insight into what they're thinking by the words they use. I don't presume to have a crystal ball or be a mind reader to know what anyone thinks. I respond to their statements and what they think. Call in the night, I was responding to the accusation that the Supreme Court ended racial affirmative action, and they did not. They did not even address affirmative action, but they addressed a narrowly focused issue, and it has the issue of awarding by codified regulation racial preferences and admissions to Harvard University. Now, does this open the door to challenges from other venues? Yes, it does. But again, Supreme Court decided to make this decision narrowly focused, and it was. But does it open the door to more challenges? Absolutely. And you can count on there being more. And all of them will be based on whether or not there is a codified, meaning in some sort of formalized manner, a benefit that is only given to persons possessing immutable genetic characteristics. That is what they address in their ruling. Nothing more, nothing less. And I called in to address that misperception because that is not what the Supreme Court did. Again, if they had said they're going to get rid of affirmative action, I would oppose that ruling because I favor preparing people to meet legitimate standards and be ready to avail themselves of opportunities that are presented to them. I am in favor of that sort of affirmative action. And most other people are as well. What they are against is racially codified preferences because civil rights, whether we want to admit it or not, are not just for black people. They are for every citizen of the United States. What applies to one citizen has to apply to them all.
Yes,
let me address that. The Supreme Court decision, addressing the issue of affirmative action in admissions based off a lawsuit brought by University of North Carolina and Harvard by a conservative organization led by a white man who purposely sought out an Asian student. And even right now, many members in the Asian community are angry that their face is being used as some sort of wedge against black people. They don't appreciate that they're being used as some front line against blacks. Now, in this Supreme Court decision that was made, what was ironic about the decision, it allowed for this practice of using race in admissions to exist in military schools like West Point and Air Force Academy, right? So where is the consistency on merit? If the argument is about merit, then where is it when it comes to the military schools? But what they're saying is we need these non-white people to die on the battlefield if we have another war, just like in Vietnam. Now, also, there's a component in admissions called legacy admissions. And that is if your daddy went to Harvard, your grandfather was at UNC. Now, the proportion of white students who don't qualify academically that get into colleges acceptance rate for that is way higher than blacks, than Hispanics, and then Asians. So if an Asian student is complaining that they got bumped, if assuming that there are a lot of Asian students that believe in this propaganda, they should be angry at the white kids who get in because of legacy admission. You see, what this decision does, gentlemen, like white folks always do with law, is create a precedent to tear down any effort that was done to address disparity. So now, just like during Reconstruction, when Reconstruction was being attacked by white people who regrouped, the advancement that black people made during Reconstruction, because that really was the time where America was going to experiment with true democracy, was during Reconstruction, not during the so-called founding fathers. But it was the Reconstruction era when black men were allowed to vote and participate in politics.
Right.
But the white folk came back together. Yeah, what I'm saying, the white folk attacked those Reconstruction precedents. You're going to see now that all efforts, because I had read where scholarships, so-called minority scholarships, are being attacked now. They want to say they're going to take everything away. And I'm going to conclude, and I'm going to say this. We've got to put all this into context.
Yeah.
During the Civil Rights Movement, the reason why you had these Supreme Court decisions made that were progressive, like Brown versus the Board, so on and so forth, the U.S. was in a cold war against the Soviet Union. So it didn't want the Soviet Union to use the contradiction of American apartheid and America not advocating for rights and freedom. So there were some concessions made. Now,
that's right.
That's why the NAACP cut a deal with the establishment to purge its ranks of any leftist influence of blacks. And that's why the NAACP went on attack against Paul Robeson. But let me tell you what's happening now.
The U.S.
is losing its global influence and control of the planet. It cannot compete against China, and Russia and China are world powers. The industrial base of America has been shipped away by the capitalist class of America. Whites who were working and who would have these hard hat jobs don't have these jobs, so they're angry. So the elite whites got to give them something to eat on, and that's black people. So all this attack on critical race theory and all this stuff on immigrants is because the poor working class whites got to have somebody to vent their anger and frustration on. And so now all of these attempts to ameliorate racial disparity is on the chopping block because white folk are now turning more into vampires and need some blood to feast on.
Okay, Shabaka. First of all, academic institutions like Harvard were denying that they use racial preferences for admission in the university. They adamantly denied that they were doing it. Now we're being told since they ended it, that means that will be the end of black people at Harvard and other elite universities. People won't be able to make the admission standard. After denying they were doing, they were just admitting him same way as other people. We now know they were lying. Now, second of all, Supreme Court, again, I want to emphasize this because people keep ignoring it. Supreme Court made a narrowly focused decision. They did not rule on admissions to the service academies. They did not rule on racial preferences in business practices and business design. They confined it to what the plaintiffs brought before their court, which is what they usually do when they make a constitutional ruling. It was narrowly focused. It did not address legacies. abortion's true, are a significant part of college admissions, anyone of any race can be a legatee. And many of them are, in fact, people of color, because only 68% of a legatee admissions to Harvard are those of white people. And finally, I want to make this clear. I don't want to act as though these people who brought this case did not have a solid basis for making. I'm talking about the plaintiffs. I don't care who it may be encouraged them to get there. That's irrelevant to me. My question, my only concern is, did they prove their case? And here's how they did it. They broke the universe of admissions to Harvard into deciles. You know what a decile is? A decile is a tenth of a universe of a particular population group. All right? The tenth of a universal group in which a population is divided according to the distribution of values of a particular variable within that group. Okay? And I'll illustrate you how that works. Here's what they did. And we know mathematics is racist, but they did prove it mathematically why they were being discriminated, particularly Asian students. If you look at students admitted to Harvard in the 10th academic decile, out of all the people who qualified, and when I talk about the quality of the qualifications, whether it was the minimal qualification or the maximum, just let's forget that for the moment. Let's just talk about people who met the qualifications in the number 10 decile. 15.3% of those admitted were white. 12.7% of those admitted were Asian. 31.3% were Hispanic were admitted. And guess what the African-American percentage was of those who qualified? 56.1. Let's go down to the next decile. Academic decile 9.
Okay.
White students, 10.8. Asian Americans, 7.6, 26.2. Black people, African Americans, 54.6. It goes on similarly all the way down. It doesn't begin to look normal, but you got down to the number 3 academic decile. In all of those deciles, 8, 44.5, 7, 41.1, 6, 29.7, 5, 22.4, and on and on. None of the other categories look anything like that. And that wasn't the only thing they showed. They're able to show through texts and memos specific demonstrations of we have too many Asians and we are determined to limit the numbers there. With their own writing, they proved beyond any doubt that they were being discriminated against by any objective criteria and objective measure. So let's not pretend that they didn't come there with a strong case and they didn't make it conclusive both mathematically and with empirical objective data obtained from the University of Harvard itself.
Also, gentlemen, I like to point out when I pointed out this book about We the Elite, How the Constitution Served the Few, let us not forget the reports of Clarence Thomas and his hobnobbing with billionaires and all the gifts that the billionaires have given him. I mean, it's endless what's going on. So we see the corruption with big money and even the Supreme Court justices. And Clarence Thomas himself, out of his own words, said he wouldn't be where he was had it not been for affirmative action. So all of this conservative posturing is just nothing but a bunch of bullshit. That's why I don't take none of them seriously, black or white conservative. It's just perpetuating for racism, white supremacy, and it's so sad when black people stand in the front of the parade with a shirt that says white supremacy number one and sit up there and use the logic and argument that the races have developed to perpetuate racism. When black people have suffered, sacrificed, went through unknown inhumanities that the devil wouldn't even thought of, and yet you got black people who feel free to rub elbows with racists and white supremacists and stand up there and advocate their bull crap. I know they're rolling over in their graves, the ancestors.
Well, my question is not why people are for or against racial preferences and affirmative action. My question is why are people against the Equal Protection Clause? That's what the question is for me. Now, I'll leave it to others to decide what should or shouldn't have been done or how much outrage they decide they wish to marshal against a particular Supreme Court decision. But the Supreme Court is not there to solve all the problems of mankind. It is to decide what issue before it is constitutional or not. And in this case, they got it 100% right. It was 100% correct. They're not there to solve all the problems of mankind, the problem of, and by the way, the NAACP and a outfit called Lawyers for Civil Rights has filed a brief with the Supreme Court challenging the constitutionality of legacy admission. So there you go. It may just come before the Supreme Court whether or not legacy admissions are constitutional. So the Supreme Court may be, in fact, deciding that issue relatively shortly.
Clarence Thomas said himself, only God knows where I'd be had it not been for affirmative action. And, I mean, that's a hell of a hypocrite, which it doesn't surprise me because that's what this conservative movement is based on, hypocrisy. But he himself raised positively about the value of affirmative action. And, again, all of the information about the relationships between him and billionaires is further evidence of how this establishment has always been in the interest of the very elite and the very wealthy. It's bought and paid for. The executive branch, the legislative branch, the judicial branch is bought and paid for by the elites of this country.
Yeah. Well, Thomas Jefferson benefited from slavery, and even he knew it was wrong. Even as he was benefiting from it, he knew it was wrong and should be condemned. Clarence Thomas, even if he did benefit from affirmative action, I do not believe they did. Let's say that he did. For the sake of argument, let's say that Clarence Thomas did benefit from affirmative action. It is wrong. He knows it is wrong. And in his duty as Supreme Court Associate Justice, he said why it was wrong in his concurring opinion. And I say to you, he got it right, no matter if he benefited from it or not.
Charge. Did he give up his slaves? No, he ended up having a whole bunch of kids out of wedlock with Sally Hemings, right? So he knew it was wrong, but he still continued to do it.
Well, now, he may have, but people who say the DNA evidence conclusively proves it are wrong. The Smithsonian Institute said that they could not prove it conclusively. Did they say it was possible? Yes. Did they say it was even likely? Yes. It was definitely someone in the Jefferson family line. It may or may not have been Thomas Jefferson. It's certainly probable, given the fact this woman looked like her sister, who was his wife, whom he loved dearly. But people who say it conclusively proves it are simply wrong. They're going by the science, because the science did not conclusively prove through DNA that Thomas Jefferson was the father of Sally Hemings' children.
Who was he the father of, man?
Could have been Randolph Jefferson, his brother. I'm not saying, if you ask, was it possible? Yes, I think it was possible. Likely, even, he was the father. The problem I'm having is people are saying it proved it, which it did not. Not if you believe in science.
Well, what I find interesting, gentlemen, is you got black people out here putting their life on the line to defend every single argument, to defend racist agenda. I mean, I just think that it is just so incredible. So if you say that the founding fathers were racist, in fact, if we snap our fingers right now and go back in time, I suspect all of us would be enslaved by Thomas Jefferson. Even the person that's here defending Thomas Jefferson, it would be hilarious because Thomas Jefferson would tell him to get out the house.
I'm not going to defend a slaver who enslaves people, but I'm simply saying what the evidence reveals, and people make allegations that are simply not true. The DNA evidence conclusively proved Thomas Jefferson was fought. That is simply not true, no matter how much you wish it to be, because evidence does not say that. Now, again, if you're going to tell me it's likely, okay, we got it. I believe in truth. I don't believe in agendas and in shading things because I want something to be so.
Let me say this, gentlemen. The evidence that Thomas Jefferson was the father of Sally Hemings' children is stronger than the evidence that the election conspiracy theorists trying to put out that the election was stolen. In fact, they just indicted some fake electors today in the state of Michigan trying to overturn the election. So, you know, so it's just foolishness, man. It's just foolishness.
Well, okay, let's take a look at that one, too, because there's an argument to be made there, too, because we did, they did, Save Lives submitted an alternate slate of electors in 1960, and nobody got indicted.
We got to bring the call.
They did exactly the same thing and overturned the election in Hawaii, and nobody got indicted.
Okay, hold on 1 second, Sarge. Joseph Gibson is sitting here in the chat room, okay? Is that in October of 2020, Harvard reported 154 black first-year students, given that the child poverty rate in black America hovers north of 30% in an equitable society. Some 40 black freshmen would have come from poor families. The income segregation study did not disaggregate income brackets by race, and neither does, Harvard. But the university, okay, does disclose that about a quarter of its latest freshman class comes from families with incomes below 85 grand, its threshold for full financial aid, okay? And we see Sarge here is in the chat room. Hold on, Sarge, we're going to get back with you. Now, Joe Gibson, writing in the American Journal of Education and 007, the Princeton sociology professor Douglas Massey observed that 40% of black students in the Ivy League were first or second generation immigrants. Black immigrants are the highest earning and best educated subset black America. Okay, well, see, Joe, I'm going to carry this here on the air. When you get stopped by the police department, okay, and you're a black person in this country, they're not going to ask if you're from the Caribbean. They're not going to ask if you're from West Africa. They're not going to ask if you're from France. They're not going to ask if you're from Los Angeles or Compton or Chicago. The only thing that that cop is going to say when he gets on that squawk and running to make is that we got four black males right here. Period. See, this is the point here that we're trying to make right here. And we see we got Brother Tyrone in here, and also, too, happy birthday to the Anchorman again, and we see Sarge is in the chat room. Okay, so we're going to unmute Sarge's mic. Okay. Yeah, we ain't forgot about you, Sarge. You know what I'm saying? Just want to make sure that you got some comments in here. Okay. All righty. All righty. Okay, so we got Sarge on mute.
I just want you to know now, Shabaga, and I, again, this is something I've never not said. I've said it to you repeatedly. By the standards of today, there is no doubt that almost all of the founders of the United States were racist, all right? They were bigoted and racist.
Okay, right. Hallelujah.
And today, there is no doubt whatsoever about that. However, what they created was a country with the mechanisms in place to ensure that equality of opportunity could ultimately prevail. That's what they created, and that was their value to history and to mankind. So when people say this about, oh, they weren't 2020 woke, they're damn right they weren't. But I tell you one thing, they came together with a prepositional nation that was founded on principles that are crystallized in the Declaration of Independence, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights. And to that extent, they did something that no one else in the history of mankind had ever done. And for that, they should be thanked, even though they were racist.
Let me rebut that, gentlemen. Even though they were racist, that in of itself rules out what it was supposed to be for everybody. So because it never been that for African American people, it never been that for Native Indigenous people, and so it was designed as a white nation. All white people and black people was to envision, they were envisioned to be servants forever. That's why they fought a brutal civil war among themselves where almost a million people were killed fighting over who was going to control black people. And so all of this phony narrative that these conservatives say, that's what I've lately have dedicated my show to attack that pull that by the horn and say this is bullshit. It stinks. It's a lie. And
right.
So
yep.
when you look at these laws change. Whether or not American blacks are full citizens, that is still questionable to this day.
It got
to
be voted
on.
Yes,
sir. I want to read something.
The Civil Rights Act.
I've got a question.
The law has to be voted on every 25 years.
Yeah.
That was shot down.
No, that's not what happened. Is it true that Moorish Africans taught the United States how to write up a constitution? Is that true? That they were
I didn't hear the question. You start that over again, please.
Is it true that Moorish Africans taught the white Americans how to draw up a constitution?
No, it is not true.
Okay.
No, because they had a little thing called debate on the Constitution, and they spoke of the antecedents and the inspirations for the Constitution in those debates. They told everybody what their philosophical were, among other things, the Roman Republic, the Greek city-states, the Mayflower Compact, the Magna Carta, the English Civil War, a whole host of other things. They put in there as their inspiration for the Constitution. They spoke and debated about it at length. There should be no doubt as to what inspired them to create the Constitution in this nation in the manner that they did.
Okay, Sarge, I'm going to tell you something. Okay, I'm going to read you something right here. Okay, but we got Joe Gibson calling in. Okay, Joe, just hold on. We're going to unmute your mic, but I got to read this right here. Okay. First place, as we all know, the Greeks came to Kemet, and they stole everything. So, therefore, Sarge, I respect your knowledge and your intelligence, but, you know, the only thing that them dudes brought was filth, disease, and their homosexuality. Now, reading this here by Reginald Major, democracy, functional, vibrant, participatory democracy is revolutionary. But it requires well-informed, concerned citizens who know their rights and who have a capacity to become angry when those rights are violated. The dilemma which blacks find themselves involved is the choice of between violent assertion of their rights to be human and a nonviolent acceptance of a majority silently submitting to the ruination of their own lives. Okay, no one, regardless of ethnic background, is going to escape the political upheaval that is revolution. Okay, now let's look at the dump, as in human shit, and that there's, you know, that I will say to him. Okay, the man is crazy. Okay, he's out of his mind. You see, he's a danger to democracy itself. Okay, Joe Biden is not too much better. He signed the federal crime bill, you know, in the 90s when Clinton was the president, and he said he didn't want his children going to no racial jungle of being integrated. You see what I'm saying? So it's pretty much that you're accepting the lesser of two evils. And this is why that we have always, you know, had stated that we need our right to self-determination. You see what I mean? Now, also, too, the dump, as in human shit, and the panties of Florida are dedicating to pretty much eliminating us off the face of the earth, okay? You know, people of African descent. I mean, they know it, we know it, but the media sits up there and try to say, oh, no, it's not like that, okay? Then just like that, what's that Marjorie Taylor Green Tramp or whatever, you know, that bimbo, you know what I'm saying? She's insane.
Somebody's
don't have to mention the likes of Anne. Okay, somebody's sleeping on the phone, okay? And then
right.
not to mention the fact that Anne Coulter, okay? Okay. And then Ann Coulter, Brother Chase, you and I know, because you and I were supposed to meet at Berkeley before the COVID hit, and Ann Coulter was going to be there to speak, and I was going to go up there and cuss Ann Coulter out. And Miss Coulter, you're welcome to call in at 516-418
5996 and press 1, and I'll be more than happy to place your racist behind on the air. What it is, black family, is that they are in fear of a black insurrection. And then the racist slave trade and pedophile who we're talking about, Thomas Jefferson, that's why he signed it into law in his State of the Union in 1804. After the revolt that happened in Haiti, is that we got to ban importation of these slaves coming in here because we're not treating them the best way, and they will rebel. That's why we got to cut the man's balls off. That's why we got to rape this woman in this presence. This is why we got to sodomize him. And I think, Brother Che, that Brother Tariq Nasheed and what have you, and the other scholars that did the hidden colors on it.
Yeah, buck breaking.
Yeah, am I right on that?
That's buck breaking.
Yeah, buck breaking syndrome. Yeah, we're going to let Joe come on in a moment. Okay. But also, too, but see, but this is why that they would violate. Yes, sir. And then this is why that they will violate the black woman in the presence of the black female. This is why they will degrade the black male in the presence of the black female. So she can say, oh, well, this fool can't protect me, so I might as well go up here and give all this nice, juicy, cherry, these big jugs to the slave master. And keep in mind that the slave master's wife did not have the black woman's attributes. So what does the Karen do? Well, Mandingo, you better come here and spend some time with me, or I'm going to tell the slave master that you raped me. So he's damned if he do, damned if he does. And, of course, you know, Joe Gibson is yet to answer this question, as the heavyweight champion said in 1974, no, we are not brothers. Brothers don't take brothers and put them on trees and cut their private parts off and put it off in their mouth and castrate them. And just like look what happened to Emmett Till with old Caroline Bryant. Oh, well, he whistled at me. Okay. And then she was never prosecuted for that. You know, and as you know, Sarge, being from Chicago, you know about him and Till. You know what I'm saying? He lived over there off of 64th and St. Lawrence on the south side.
Uh-huh.
You know,
I know, believe me.
That I did.
I used to get warned about not winding up like him and Till when I visited my relatives in the south.
I think Lady Ted.
Yeah, okay. All right, so we're going to
Can I say something?
Yeah, by all means, Juan.
This is El Zigger. Can I say something?
Okay.
Yeah. All I want to say is I believe it was back in 2010 or 2011, before they tied me up and sent me to the isolation room, I wrote a letter to Barack Obama, and at that time, I really didn't even know what really was going on because they had me medication up, and, you know, to where I didn't even really know what was going on with myself. Anyways, what I put in that letter, I wanted to send it to the White House. I don't know if it got there or not, but I gave it to the staff member. I think he threw it away because it never ended up going there because I never did get no answer. But what I put in the letter, I said the main thing I put, I said regardless of what happens to me, whatever happens that's going to go on, I didn't even know if I was going to make it alive or get out of there. But I put the letter made sense. You know what I'm saying? The letter made sense. And in that letter, it says, why can't a black man go run for president, but not just running for president, but a president that has a felony? Why can't a person, and you know what I'm saying, after all what our presidents have done in the past, why can't a black man who has a felony on his record run for president at a young age and take over the, you know, the presidential party by running for president and having the mental capacity to understand what was going on? So you know what they did? They fed me up with medication, tried to get me out of my mind, and then stripped me down to the bed naked, tied down, and did all kinds of stuff, which I don't know what would happen to me because I was so much out of it because I was in so much medication.
Oh, man.
But the main thing was, I said, why can't a person with a felony run for president? And now you see all the stuff that's going on now.
They can. There's no constitutional prohibition for a convicted felon to be president of the United States. There's only three requirements in the Constitution to be president. One, you must be 35 years of age or older when you take the oath of office. Number two, 14 years of your 35 years or more must have been resident in one or more of the States of the Union, you have to have at least 14 years mm-hmm. of your life that you lived in one or more of the United States, and finally, you got to be a natural born citizen. There are no other requirements. Now, it is up to the American people to decide if they want to vote for you if you're a convicted felon, but nothing in the Constitution prohibits a multiple convicted felon from being president.
See, and I should have become president. The only thing was wrong with me is probably the age difference.
If you
convince
the people
to
vote for you, then you can be president. All you got to do is say, look, I know I'm a convicted felon, but you need to vote for me anyway because this is what I can do for you. Now, that's a hard thing to do, but if you can do it,
I agree with you on that. Okay, how many governors of Illinois stars have been arrested and became convicted of felons? I mean, let's look at Mayor. Let's look at Mayor.
But in the last 35 years, about four.
Okay, now let's look at Mayor and Barry.
George Ryan, Scott, William Stratton, and Rod Blagojevich.
And see, but let me tell you something. Before they even did that, years ago, I was in the infirmary room,
Lady J to the radio, please. Welcome, Lady J. Lady J.
Hey, welcome, Lady J.
Today.
How are you?
Thank you.
Hey, Lady J. How
you
doing?
How you doing? Black Power.
Hello.
How about yourself?
Pretty decent. Just wanted to interrupt and say hi and welcome myself onto the program.
Good to have you on board.
Oh, yeah.
Good to have you.
You on board.
Is that Sarge?
Oh, yeah.
Sarge, you get on. Is that Sarge? Sarge,
We got Sarge here. We got Joe Gibson here. We got Brother Warren here.
The anchor The tethered anchor.
And we got
is
the anchor man.
Is he on you, too?
Who's that?
Happy birthday, Twizzy. You know, his family is tethered and anchored to the United States, and that he should come off of reparations already because he had the audacity, his people had the audacity to say we can't have reparations when they're tethered and anchored babies. Just come on, Joe Gibson, just come on. Just admit that you're wrong. How you doing, Joe Gibson? I'll just play with you.
Great.
You know you're not going to win it. Colonizing is the truth.
There's a cordial atmosphere in the show tonight. We're having a lot of fun and it's challenging. It's good. That's what it's supposed to be.
Gentlemen, is that now, just like what they said right there, what is that there? The preamble to the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, that says that when the government goes whack, that not only do the people have a right to change it, they have a duty to change it. Okay, so now, I don't understand how the dude that wears the panties in Florida, you know the dude, the governor there who wears panties, okay? Now, how is he going to sit up there and talk about that this year makes other groups of people feel uncomfortable when we talk about the horrors of this country that is committed against people of color? Like, I got some photographs from 1919.
They got to let that go. It's about to get real ugly and cold out here. You know, the people's feelings is going to get real hurt now. Because, blacks should race to the top instead of receiving the fucking unavailable, untangible trickle-down effect. You know what I mean? So it's about to get
I agree with you, Lady Chack. I've never been... Okay, and that's just it, though, Lady Chack. I never believed in Reaganomics either, because Reaganomics, believing in that garbage by Adam Smith, okay, which is total garbage, which is totally inequitable, and let everybody go out here and try to get rich, and then you have the leaky bucket theory of where the revenue will trickle down, and it hasn't. Look at these bastards over there in Silicon Valley.
Come on now, Chewbacca. Come on now, Chewbacca. But Adam Smith did not create free market economics. Free market economics existed long before Adam Smith was ever born. He simply described the system that had been in being for millennia. He described it. It wasn't like Marxism that was created out of a social degenerate head and from whole cloth.
Okay.
He described a system that was in existence worldwide and had been so for thousands of years. He simply described it.
I had to read that shit in college when I was studying to get my bachelor's degree in criminology and criminal justice. But he gets the term of the founder of it. But yeah, it's been around for millennia. Stars.
Yeah, but he didn't invent it. That's the point I'm trying to make. He was describing a system of free economics that develops when people see it is in their mutual interest to barter for goods and services. That's essentially what free market economics is.
Mm-hmm.
He described it. He didn't create it. Like Karl Marx did, a social degenerate, a sociopath, a guy who runs off his fucking parents.
Yeah,
but you know, right
and
now,
the thing is,
you have capitalism
too.
By imperialism today in the United States. The capitalism today is not real free market. There's no free market.
Exactly. I agree with you. It's not free market economics.
I don't think Joe Gibson can really talk about it because, you know, there's people immigrated over here and stuck in the country illegally and then tethered themselves and had entry babies and then refused to give reparations. I just can't fathom that
everyone's
we're even
immigrated
about
over here. Everyone has immigrated over here one time or another.
Yes, they did. They jumped on a boat.
Okay, so black people, Joe.
We
didn't immigrate here, Joe. We were brought here.
No. You're right. You were forcibly brought over here, but you were sold by your own people in Northwest Africa.
Joe, that was the biggest lie that was ever told, Joe.
The white people just went over there and just prowled around and kidnapped the people from Africa. They overpowered all the kings.
Your people immigrated. They snuck in illegally. And then they got their shit together. You're an immigrant. You snuck over illegally.
Let me say this to Joe. When you immigrate over here illegally, we were already here.
You came illegally.
Okay.
You owe us reparations.
Okay,
no,
Joe.
Wait a minute
let
now.
Let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this question, Joe. Now, Joe, the slave trade is a very complex issue. It went on over 400 years. But let's go with your theory. Let's go with your theory, Joe, that the Africans sold the Africans. All right. So let's say a person sells their child in, let's say, a sex trade. Now, when the law cracks down, the law just going to crack down on the parent that sold their child? What about the one that bought the child? The law not going to deal with them?
But we're not dealing with sex trade. We're not telling children.
What I'm saying, Joe, is you had a slave trade still going on today. No, Joe. Let's look at it.
Just admit you're a fucking tethered anchor baby. Just admit to it and you owe us reparations. And then we can let it go.
Joe, you said if you got an offer, you were not going to give black people reparations.
You said that because you didn't think that they deserved it. But you really, if
no,
you really
no,
you,
no, nobody
you
should get reparations.
Legally.
No.
And
no,
your family
we're not
going to
admit
to
that now. We're not
going to
admit
to
that.
Hey,
to
I got something
state.
To say.
Illegally.
I got something to say. This is Elza.
One at a time.
I'm not going to let it go, family. Sorry, I can't let it go.
Can I say something?
We have mulattoes.
Yeah, go ahead, Warren.
Can I not let that go?
This is El Zinga. Can I say something?
And lady change.
What I want to say real quick is that if we really think about this issue, we're all foreigners. We all are foreigners, if you think about it.
But what I want to do is engage.
Black Americans are not foreigners, my brother.
I want to engage Joe. What Joe is articulating a talking point. So I want to expose this talking point and set it up and then knock the leg from under it. Okay, let's go back to the slave trade, Joe. All right, so you say that Africans sold Africans. All right, let's Let's hold you to that. Let's say that. So
this is
no
a factual statement, but he's got a point. But he can't lie on that. He got a point. He can't lie on it, though. He can't hold. That statement only holds water for a certain little time.
Well, I'm trying to get to the point. So, Joe, what about the white people who had the taste to buy Africans to work on their plantations in the Caribbean and throughout America to produce crops like sugar, tobacco, and cotton and became millionaires? You don't put emphasis on that, Joe?
Right.
That gave a financial and economic base for their holdings for Britain, for France, okay, and for Spain and Portugal that became, well, to this day, at least they're in decline
and
now.
The Netherlands.
But for 500 years,
Look at the history of slavery and all the other peoples that were slavery. Who pays for that?
Barbarian who went down into Egypt taking little boys with him. You know what I'm saying? And they called him great. He was a barbarian and he was a filthy savage is what he was. We don't care about that, Joe. This is Shabaka's black experience in hand. We deal with the black experience from the beginning of time.
Well, the black experience, then you're not being truthful and you're not being honest in the black experience.
Well, Joe, check this out.
I got a question for Shabaka. As to how did they treat us like savages? I think that's the question for the African American people. It's not so much about who was slavery and who wasn't slavery. It's how the black people as the African-American community and us being a people, how they treated us like savages. It's not about them being white or Hispanic
or all that. Hold on, my man. Now, let me answer that question right there, okay? Then I'm going to unmute Joe's mic, okay? First of all, what you have to understand is that when you look at the nations in Africa that were built, right, the Nubian nations, okay, even the Zulu nation, they would have wars, they would have disputes. So what happened was is that the losing nation would be incorporated into the winning nation. This is how King Shaka built the Zulu Empire. The same thing with Mansa Musa, which built the Songhai Empire. But as far as being brutal to them, castrating them, raping their women, brutalizing their children, no, they didn't do that. It was simply incorporated into it. Okay, now, Joe Gibson is talking this garbage about, you know, how brutal we were and what happened. Now, let's look at the United States military of August 6, 1945. Okay, is that when the Japanese Empire had their kamikaze planes that were flying the planes into the U.S. military ships, right? So Truman said, hey, you come up with the Manhattan Project. So he went up there and deliberately dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. My question is, Joe Gibson, and I'm going to unmute your mic because I'm very interested in your answer. Okay, how come they didn't drop it on Berlin and Munich? All right.
Okay,
first of all, understand this. The Manhattan Project was undertaken because Hungarian physicists, led by one of them named Leo Szilard, wrote a letter to Albert Einstein worried about the German research heavy water into obtaining new fissionable material to create an atomic bomb. He wrote it to Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein would bring it to the attention of Franklin Roosevelt because they were worried that the Germans were going to get the bomb. So they were trying to beat the Germans to the bomb. Now, listen to this now. This is critical, folks. The bomb was the first atomic bomb was not detonated. It wasn't ready for detonation until July 16, 1945. Germany surrendered unconditionally May 8, 1945. They were getting the bomb ready to drop on Germany. The resistance had been strong enough. but they surrendered before the bomb was ready. So here we're getting ready to run invasion in Japan. We are anticipating 1 million casualties in the invasion of Japan. Killed, wounded, maimed, missing, prisoners of war. 1 million casualties. Now, what is the alternative to those 1 million casualties? I'll tell you what it was. Using the atomic bomb. If Germany had been still resisting in a manner Japan was in July of 1945, believe this, they would have dropped the bomb on Germany because that's who they were defending it to use against in the first place.
Never mind, I'm going to leave that alone. Carry on, gentlemen.
You ought to because the historical facts are the historical facts.
The fuck does this got to... Shabaka, where was this going in the line of blackness? That's all I heard was white, white. Where was this going in the line of blackness?
Okay.
We'll see the 202 caller.
I want to say this to you. Okay, hold on, Lady Teddy. Give me 1 second, ma'am. Okay, now Joe Gibson writes here, the Cape Coast of God. For centuries along the West African coast, millions of Africans were sold into slavery and shipped across the Atlantic to the Americas. The middlemen were the European slave traders based in forts like Ghana's Cape Coast Castle. Okay, now a tourist attraction and a somber reminder of the brutal crime against humanity. That crime is usually blamed entirely on European outsiders who inflicted slavery on African victims. But supposedly new research, or which I'm going to say, which is a new bunch of bullshit that's put together by some brain-dead African scholars, supports a different view, that Africans shared the blame for slavery. It was Africans themselves who enslaved their fellow Africans, sending them to the coast to be shipped outside, says researcher Akusa Purbi of the University of Ghana. Well, his ass is welcome to call in, okay? We lost Warren. Okay, well, thank you for calling in, Warren. Yeah, you know, we definitely appreciate your input. Okay, based on her studies, she says European slave traders, almost without exception, did not themselves capture the slaves. They bought them from other Africans. Okay, now, see, this is what I've been saying all along, okay? It's the same thing what they did with the Trail of Tears here in the United States with the Nez Perce, okay? So what happened was is that they're the ones who won the wars, you know, they seized the cave people, right? And then Joe Gibson is saying, selling them for what? Okay, which blows his premise out of the water because we had the gold. We had the minerals. Okay, so you couldn't have been selling them for gold. Okay, so then what happened is, as the slave market grew in the Caribbean, okay, in the United States, in Paris, okay, in Amsterdam, okay, you know, they came up and says, you know what, man? Why don't we just sit up there, man, and just go in and just take all of them and kill them? Including the ones that did sell it. So Joe Gibson, when you sit up there and admit that fact, man, you know, then your story might hold on to something. But you're very, very selective about what you're saying. But what you forget, Joe Gibson, is that we research our shows, man, and we definitely appreciate and what blows Joe's premise out the water, too, is the case of Sen Q in 1839 of Amistad. Okay, so that did blow Joe's
Let me tell you something for food for thought. When they got here, they were immediately put to work in all sorts of different factions, whether it was breeding or manning the fields or doing whatever to bring economic purposes for the whites again, right? And they built this country, and then they helped build up the fucking 13 colonies, right? The 13 little colonies over there, if I remember correctly, and. When your indentured servants, your white slaves, right? Those were, and from the primary source, those were criminals and undesirable. They got caught in Europe doing bad things like stupid shit. And in order to pay their debts off, they had to come over here and do the work. And they were set free. They were set free, and they paid their debt. They even got a little bit of money, if I'm not correct, right? So they didn't have to be indentured.
Yeah, they did, ladies.
They didn't have to be slaves.
Why are you trying to cash in on their misfortune? Why are you trying to cash in opportunity when you suffered none of these?
Because y'all never paid us. Y'all never paid us.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got a promissory note of 40 acres and a mule, and that never happened.
Right.
You reneged on the contract.
Exactly.
Wait,
And if you go over whatever was written there, whoever was owned was bought by the other slaves either. The other slaves were too, if it didn't go to the first slave, it was supposed to be passed down to the next one and their descendants, and they were supposed to be free, and they never were. And then when it did come time to get their, to be told they were free, it was 2 fucking years later.
Yep.
They got
okay, Lady K, let me interrupt
labor.
You for one sec.
Free labor, free breeding,
okay, let me interrupt
free everything.
For, back on,
okay, let me interrupt for one. Yeah, yeah, I see we got the anchorman, but also, too, we got Brother Akbar coming out, calling out of Carolina, okay, out of 202. Is that you there, Brother Akbar?
Black
and how you doing?
Brother Akbar,
yeah,
how you doing?
And Black Power to you, Brother Shango. We're happy to be here live with you.
Black Power.
And we couldn't help but over
yes,
here with part of the conversation. And I can't help but to intercede and say the fact that the advantage of having a professor like Dr. Abdul Aleem Shabazz, Lonnie Shabazz, the mathematician, scientist, and historian, and on those very facts,
mm-hmm.
go in deep in that rabbit hole, which will come out with the great white shark. And that is the fact that
mm-hmm.
369, that's what you need to look at, the 369, how black men were treated during that period of World War One. World War One.
Yes, sir.
The black man couldn't fight in the infantry. Do you know that the United Snakes of America forced the black infantry, forced the black soldier to fight under a French banner? And when they forced them to fight under
yeah.
the French banner, they got their first test and proved to be superior soldiers on the field under the French. And they were still misrepresented by the American government, all the associates of the higher ranking, what you call the decorated soldiers of America that were fighting for a certain amount of control, a certain white
mm-hmm.
globalization
mm-hmm.
that they were fighting for to establish that. Now, in the break of that, he alluded to Japan. Don't overlook your soldier. Your soldier is Doreen Miller, who is just now, they're just decorated now, years
yes,
after he he's the uncle of the national chairman, Hakeem Ekinakin Zinger, Doreen Miller,
okay.
the most decorated black man to ever fight in anybody's war in modern times. And that he held
okay.
off the Japanese army and did those great feats as a decorated soldier. They have named a warship. He was so high up in the military, just the soldier that represented the best in fighting on the ground, in the air, wherever we had to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came into the Tuskegee Airmen and all of that. But study, please, please,
mm-hmm.
please study the 369. That will show you. The 369
mm-hmm.
still is in existence today because it proved himself, and a couple of people took an interest in these soldiers. He was very, very outstanding soldiers, basically home and abroad. And the modernization
mm-hmm.
of that is the finalization of Colin Powell, the most decorated soldier ever, and he was vilified,
right.
and then they hit him with the stab and the jab, pressing your
right.
military might at this hour, and that's why it's so good to have black power, your own military, and that's to have something
yes,
in
sir.
The way of protecting your own vested interest. And so I open with that.
Yes,
sir.
Yeah,
what military is that?
Black
I'd
Liberation
like
Army. Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Yeah, the black.
Yeah.
That's a party.
I say, brother.
Military,
yeah.
When you don't see the good thing about having your own military, when you need one, you don't have to go and raise the military. Your military is already in place.
Right.
And the disadvantage of serving
mm-hmm.
the white
that
man's
part.
Military is that he could come and very well be on your side. But if you reverse the polarity, he could very well come and wipe you out, do a massacre. That massacre in Tulsa was by the consent of the U.S. Army. It's by the consent of the airways to allow something to fly over Tulsa
right.
and bomb 10,000 homes, to allow something to fly
yeah,
over
burst their rail
to
the
Philadelphia and bomb the whole
city.
Yes.
So this military may not always be in our interest, but when you have your own military, then you know I got your back. Black
mm-hmm.
power. Black
yes, sir. Now, Brother Akbar,
Black
let me ask you this
I
question
say,
here,
Brother
Akbar.
Ashe.
Okay. Now, according to Joe Gibson right here, the one who is talking to you there, okay, he's got this timing up here, and you and I have discussed this here too, Brother Akbar. They're saying that the Africans had sold themselves into slavery. And, of course, as we know, the Europeans came down there with divide and conquer. And then, of course, as they got them down there to Gory Island, when they was counting how many people they can get off of that slave ship, then they went on and threw the other ones in there that did sell them as well, too. Didn't we have that conversation there, too, Brother Akbar?
Yes, sir. Why don't we please look at this transformation of Gory Island went from the point of no return. Now the professors and the educators of Ghana have now got together calling it the point of return. They are giving you almost free tour of trip to Africa to open up this project to look at what really happened in the so-called transatlantic slave trade, and it's just another cover word for just the European. The European, you must bear witness, wanted a colony in every part of Africa, in every European, the lightweight European, Denmark, Finland, all of them, Germany, the bloody Brit, the goddamn Portuguese, even the Dutch, the Norwegians, everyone wanted a colony. They have a colony in Africa, and you can see the percentage of Africa now speaking Portuguese, speaking Belgium, and the Belgium were the most notorious on the continent of Africa. So we and bring it full circle. And please, brother and sister, don't blame the victim in this equation, because the white man has always counted on someone to come and appease him. We have found that you cannot appease that damn white man.
And that is the most absurd and asinine comment I've ever heard in my mouth.
There's
no way you will ever be able to please this goddamn cracker. And if you don't believe me, just ask Michael or Janet Jackson if you can find them. Oh,
is
this
the same guy who believes if you wake up a wax in your ear, you can be the devil pissed in it?
There's a few historical inaccuracies we got to correct here.
You won't be pleased. Are
you going to tell us about historical accuracies, Joe Gibson? Come on now.
Several historical inaccuracies we got to correct here. Particularly about the Harlem Hellfighters, the 369th Infantry and the 370th Infantry Regiment. True, both of them were assigned to the French 4th Army under General Henri Girard, but not all of the black soldiers that were overseas in the American Expeditionary Force were assigned to French units. The 92nd Infantry Division was assigned to the 1st United States 1st Army, and so was the 93rd Infantry. So two regiments were signed to the French. Let's go on. Jory Miller received the Navy Cross for his actions on Pearl Harbor Day. He got the Navy Cross. He was highly decorated. He was not the most highly decorated black soldier World War II, because subsequent to World War II, when reviews were done, seven black soldiers from World War II were deemed to be worthy to be awarded the Medal of Honor, which is the highest decoration denied any serving member of the armed forces. So we got seven black men from World War II who eventually got the Medal of Honor. Colin Powell was not the most highly decorated black soldier. He was Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, which is the president's advisor. So in that respect, he was the highest ranking member of the armed forces. He was not the most highly decorated. In fact, Joe Biden just gave the Medal of Honor to another black man named Paris Davis, who accomplished unbelievable heroism in Vietnam. He's still alive. He was the first black officer to be in the special forces. And he got the Medal of Honor hung around his neck by Joe Biden.
Oh, my God, Joe Biden. How long did he have to wait,
though? I'm just saying that, that we've got to correct a few of those inaccuracies. Many black men have been awarded the Medal of Honor since World War II. And even though Dory Miller was a great hero, and Dory Miller was highly decorated, he was not the most highly decorated serviceman, black serviceman of World War II.
Okay, now, riddle me this. Okay. Okay, like
Henry Johnson got
Mike
the Medal of Honor too, by the way. Henry Johnson was in the Harlem Hellfighters too. I don't know if you ever heard of an incident called the Battle of Henry Johnson, where Henry Johnson fought off the German raiding party almost single-handedly. This black man,
yeah, like
a member of the 69th Infantry,
yeah, like
he fought off a German raiding party of 35 to 40 Germans almost single-handedly, killing seven of them and wounding many, many more. He was awarded the Medal of Honor after World War II.
A little slow because I'm not the brightest ground in the box by any means, but by for sure, the Honorable Dory Miller and the fact that I said decorative fact that he received a ship. I'm a ship builder. I built much of the craft that you may have been on some of that craft if you are military. Has worked on the Nimitz, the JFK, and we really stick built one called the Dwight D. Eisenhower. Sort of a courier destroyer type
right.
vessel that
yeah. Well, believe me, sir. Believe me, sir. Sir,
yeah,
I want to make it clear. Sir, I want to make it clear. I just want
to
make it clear. I'm not trying to downgrade Dory Miller's heroism. He was a hero, but he died when the Liscum Bay was
one at a time, brother.
I know you were meaning.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead and sidebar. And then I'm gonna bring Sarge back on.
And we understand that the energy is running high. But nevertheless, only Dwight D. Eisenhower is about, 3 to 4 football fields long and damn near 11 stories high. And when we built that was nothing really on the seas to match it. There's probably something out there different today, but in that time. But the idea of talking about Dory Miller and being decorated, in fact, that his ship being named for him, and that's the decoration that I'm talking about. And the part of Colin Powell, meaning – he is the chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, meaning Army, Air Force, Navy, Marine Corps, the goddamn National Guard, Coast Guard. Everyone had to either report or, in fact, he could sign off on all that. But what they did, they invented the wheel on Colin Powell. Let me show you something. They invented the wheel through Tom Ridge, the governor of Pennsylvania, and G.W. Bush, the governor of Texas, made a thing called the Homeland. And the Homeland Security, so they could override Colin Powell, the Secretary of State, you see. When he got to that high office, they would override him by making moves. And they used, of all people, Eleanor Holmes Norton here in Washington, D.C., got her post, her senator's post now, through winning a case for the Ku Klux Klan. A lot of people don't know that. So there's been a white undermining. When they got the usefulness from Colin Powell, they vilified him. And before that, Colin Powell not only was the most decorated military person when it comes to pound for pound, but he was the also most brilliant politician coming out of that network of GOP or Republicans. And Colin Powell, they superimposed the name G.W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and Rumsfeld over, say, Colin Powell, Michael Steele, J.C. Watts, and other brilliant people that were in the Republican Party. Just showing you the way white supremacy has worked when brothers have done their best, put up their best, and then get treated like filthy rags. And it got so bad that he would cross over to team up with the salt and pepper guy named Barack Hussein Obama at some interval. And then after that wasn't good enough, and they hit him again with the stab and the jab from the COVID-19. A cross-contamination shot from the Mandarin and the Pfeiffer and most of that stuff is illegal now. But they set him up and executed him is the bottom line. And they won't allow a black man to rise to his total prominence is another part of that bottom line. And so when we look at militarily how we're stacked up, if we were again to gravitate to our own military, we would have much more dignity. And the other nationalities, including the white supremacy on this soil, will respect you much more if you had your own military. And I only say that because wherever the Black Panther Party goes, regardless of land, label, or language, we are respected, and we basically take over wherever we go. I'm not bragging. I'm just saying.
Well, where is this
as I know them to be. Again, the facts as I know them to be, sir. And this
wherever,
is to say, a black military, it may be a nightmare, but the white man that has his military, as in Hugo Chavez, said, El Jorge Bush, right? that he called him El Grande El Diablo. He called him a grand.
I know he was in the prisons,
right? And he went into he was in the United Nations at that time, right? He was in the United Nations, and he was outgunned, outnumbered, but he had a four-piece military, and he said his piece and left. And I'm just saying to you that that four-piece. Now, all these people say they're on the front line, they believe in this and that, but see, when it comes to a test, most of the time you're dealing with a bunch of cowards, as was in the insurrection of this guy, 45.5, some call him Donald J. Trump. And that insurrection, he was
oh, yeah, the dump.
Ballot. And when he conducted all that, you see, and
brother,
then they went
Abba.
Into the insurrection,
yeah,
they were able to pump 21 police departments right here in Washington, D.C., a mile from my doorstep. And I'm just saying to you that we have the right to succeed. If they do not yield justice, they do not produce reparations, then we have the right to succession. And we can
you have no right
time.
To reparations or succession.
And we'll be more dignified
right.
on this soil with our own government. My mind.
All right. Let me unpack that. Hold on.
Brother Akbar, can I ask a question real quick on the same line that you're talking? On the same,
yes,
I just have an idea. Brother Akbar, wouldn't it make sense if we say hypothetically, because you're right, you're absolutely right and exact on what you say about the military, our military, right? We should have a military. You're absolutely right and exact. Wouldn't it be like the right idea just to propose to put all of our militants together, all our little, you know, little parties and whatnot that we have all across the United States, and we put them all together and train them all in the same, right? Trained everybody the same way, got them all on code, got them all up to, you know, up to par. Wouldn't that be considered like the start of our own military? That's a question.
Yes, ma'am. And you're so right.
Don't laugh.
Coexist mm-hmm. here in America, and they could do no more than respect that, being there's evidence, there's a preponderance of evidence that they're not going to yield mm-hmm. us justice, and you can see by the decision in Tulsa, Oklahoma, on our senior citizens, the best of us, that lasted 100 years into a massacre, and then mm-hmm. for a judge, Carolina Walls. Would put a decision to block the reparations for our senior citizens. I'm just saying to you that there's
yep.
a more overwhelming preponderance of evidence that they did not plan to yield to us. Therefore, we would only do justice
right.
by succeeding. In no wise different now, in no wise different than the Mormons settled on Utah, in no wise different than the gamblers and Italian mafias settled on Nevada.
Right.
And we are making settlements in our
right.
South. Especially in South Carolina, especially Delaware, Maryland, and Virginia.
Yes,
have to come up.
Yes,
sir.
Can I say something real quick?
To take on the U.S. government or to take on the Army, but we are here to just represent, to protect our own vested interests, because there's a preponderance mm-hmm. of evidence.
What are those vested interests?
They are
yes,
not
sir.
Going to protect our own vested interests.
What are
those? Right and exact, brother. Thank you.
I'll say.
Yes,
our lives, our businesses, women and children are not protected by the opposition.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, sir, brother Akbar. Yeah,
power,
thank you
brother.
For that. Okay.
When they put me in the academy, Shabaka, they don't say go to the calls for only the white people, okay? So that's just a bunch of crock and nonsense.
I can't
tell you. You're not looking at the problem here in America.
Okay, hold it. No. I'm censoring Joe on this one right here. I just muted his mic. In the city of Los Angeles, Joe, that's exactly what they do. I just had to get that part in right there. And with proves that, go look at the O.J. Simpson case, man.
It's 1994, O.J. Simpson case. 2023.
Joe, I lived in Los Angeles since 1960.
Get with today, Chewbacca.
And then as Sheik Akbar was saying, that man is a very, very educated man and a highly respected man. And also, too, Brother Akbar, I tell you who would just shut down Joe Gibson, man, would be the Minister of Justice.
That shut it down right there.
Dr. Truth Bay. Shut you down.
Debate many times on history.
Bay would shut
said,
you down.
It's just said, Joe, that right or wrong.
Joe, you have no history. Your history is murder, death, and destruction. That is your history.
That's your opinion.
This is
based
on
zero facts.
Can we seriously unpack this notion of secession and creating an armed military? Because I'd really like to seriously examine it and not just throw around things at random. Can we seriously examine that?
Let me chew in on that.
Let me
cue in on that.
It's a very serious topic.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead. Let the gentleman cue in on
well,
the stars.
I would like to address it if
let
I could.
Let me cue in on it real quick, Chewbacca.
Okay, let the gentleman cue in on the stars, and we're going to get back to you, stars, and we're going to get back to Mr. Akbar, then we're going to get back to Joe Gibbs. And then, of course, we haven't heard from my investigative reporter yet.
In regards to organizing a military unit and all that, to defend our own properties, yes, I am in agreement with that. But in regards to just straight up trying to do a coup d'etat, you know, with guns and utilize the military for that, I think that's like revolutionary suicide, to tell you the truth. Now, if we could, you know,
that's a nuke in the road.
If we can organize a political force to get into different political positions, then we can control the police, the military, and all that other shit. See what I'm saying? That's where I think we need to focus on. Because if we just try by brute force to try to revolt against the government is revolutionary suicide. A lot of people are gonna get fucked up, and then you know just look, they're looking for an excuse anyway to you know lock you up and throw away the key and to kill you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I'm just saying, even that kind of talk is dangerous. You see what I'm saying? That's just my
view on
it. That's why I don't talk like that. That's why I don't talk about shit like that. And then, you know, at the same time, I don't even advocate that because I feel that the political force will produce more results. That's just my view.
We could talk about it hypothetically, and there's nothing wrong with speaking about it hypothetically. And if we are, we have to deal with the facts that are on the ground. I heard words like secession. That was one where immediately my ears pricked up when I heard people talk about seceding. Now, when the Confederacy seceded in 1861, it wasn't just a bunch of rednecks running around saying we're going to concede. It was members of the state legislature and the executive branches in those states, which are indissoluble elements of the Constitution. The states are indissoluble. They have to exist as long as the Constitution does. And we're just a bunch of rednecks saying we're going to leave the Union. The state legislatures of every single state in the Confederacy voted to secede from the Union. That is what it's distinct about. It wasn't just a bunch of people saying we're going to form a group and we're going to secede from the United States. That ain't the way it happened. So if you're going to talk about secession, you got to say who's going to secede and how is it going to look like. And how are the borders of this secession going to be? Are there going to be individual clumps, individual islands surrounded by other people who haven't decided to secede, or what is it? I mean, it's not coherent.
They already have secession, Sarge. Like they already have it. Every city in America.
I don't hear any coherency when I hear this sort of thing. I mean, secession is
okay,
a very meaningful word. You can't just use it lightly.
Okay, but when you have secession, Sarge, that means you're a separate territory, a separate currency, a separate form of government.
Every state
rather, if you go, you know, with the so-called demonocracy, or if you go with the republic, or if you go with the monarchy. You see what I'm saying? But as Mr. Akbar was saying, man, yeah, that there is more Bible. Because, see, the dump, as in human shit, okay, of what he is perpetuating across the country, it's not only is it insane, it is asinine, but it is very dangerous, okay? And, hey, man, and I'm not going to stand up there singing and hollering, oh, we shall overcome, and getting upside the head, man, you know what I'm saying? And that we've been hit with
what would make you happy, Shabaka?
What happened? No.
What makes you happy?
No, we couldn't
what
have
would
that.
Make you happy?
What would make me happy?
The black experience. What would make the black experience happy for America?
Oh,
and except for the reparation nonsense.
Okay, I'm gonna give you that. Number one, Joe, is the reparation. Number one is the reparation. Okay, number two is our own separate nation, man. Because see, that's the only way it's gonna do. Even Dr. King said he led people to a burning house of immigration. That ain't gonna work, man. And it's asinine to keep banging your head up against a fucking wall, man, and expecting a different result. I'm sorry.
Where is the land for the separate nation going to come from? Who is going to give up the land to administer it? And how is it going to be administered within the boundaries of the United States?
Okay, well, then what you're talking about there, Sarge, is the New Africa Republic. And then I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Akbar, you know, who has, you know, more knowledge on that.
How is this land going to be acquired? How is this land going to be acquired?
The process is not long.
Okay, let Mr. Akbar speak.
Yes, we do have land acquisition in several states. And we are producing now, believe it or not, right on the Harriet Tubman property, which is in Preston, Maryland. You can visit it right on the Nat Turner property in Virginia. We have our own land acquisition and do organic farming on the land. And so we're just asking black people to be patient with each other, patient with the Black Panther Party, and then look into it, and you can see clearly, brother and sister, you can produce your own food, clothing, shelter, transportation, and those items we can do for ourselves independently of the opposition, but we just hit the face. Just like what they tried to sell the world a package that we can't manage large sums of money, and we can't manage large groups of people. But the evidence is in now. The white man has only been doing this a couple hundred years. That was just a short period of time, and some of these people are old enough to know that we've only had a government for a little while, and we end up with a better government this time. We had no name. We went on the Revolutionary War, right? With no sharpshooters, right?
Right.
With no name.
Right.
But maybe what they thought was a bigger army, which was a laughing stock, the 13 colonies going up against the power of Great Britain, was like, hey, these people must be a joke. But now we've come out now a better neighbor, bigger and a better navy.
Okay. I'm still confused here.
I just happened to be speaking.
Okay.
I hope you can mute your mic while I'm speaking, because I certainly muted it while you were speaking. But I'm just saying that it would take just your own self-determination, and you'll learn how to manage large. Excuse me, sir. You will learn how to manage large groups of money. You will learn how to manage large groups of people through your self-determination. And why do I say that? Because we had done it before. Before our great interruption in our culture, we were already managing just fine, and even on this soil. So we don't want people to tell you, oh, you've never ran a Department of Commerce. You've never ran an aviation force. Okay. But at the time, your opposition had never done it. And they got the best of the science from our scientists, because our scientists had it all the time. So the best.
Really? How's that going over in Africa right now?
Has the game from us. That's why we demand reparations, huh? The best on the soil, our invention and our patents, right? And as Michelle Obama alluded to the fact, they rebuilt the white supremacy house, the Capitol, the Longworth, the Dirksen Building, the Supreme Court Justice, the whole nine yards, including the Library of Congress. So we're not looking outside. We're looking for what is already owed, the debt from the Mormons and the debt from our patents and inventions. And then we can settle there on something reasonable. What is meat according to the Holy Book? What is meat, meaning what is logical and practical for us at this hour? My mind.
That's for you, Joe. You tell it.
Why are you the only people that suffered slavery and discrimination throughout the history of the world?
Joe, Joe.
That are all
okay, Joe. Let me have this here, people. The reason being is for the simple fact, Joe, it is like that. We are not interested in you oppressors' history, okay? We are dealing with self-sufficiency right here, Joe. You see, that there is like, as Brother Akbar had stated, you know, and like we have stated, you see, the day of the jigaboo, the ass scratch, and the yassa boss, it's over, man. You see? You all got to understand that. There ain't no more Uncle Tom's going out there. Well, hey, Master Charlie, we love you so much. You didn't even hit a baseball. Oh, we love you so much. Just beat our ass with a horse whip, and we just do whatever you want, Charlie. Hmm. No, that bullshit is over with, man. Okay. It's for the simple fact is, you look at Ida B. Wells. You look at Harriet Tubman. You look at Paul Robeson. You see what I'm saying? But you look at the former heavyweight champion, Muhammad Ali, where he had went through. Okay. Let's look at Christopher Dorner in Los Angeles, Joe. That's a good one for you. Yeah, let's look at Brother Micah X down in Dallas, Texas. Okay. These were decorated soldiers. Okay. They made the ultimate sacrifice against the injustice, Joe. So that's what's up with that one. See, you're not going to keep pulling that wool over our eyes, man, thinking that we're a bunch of dumbass niggas, man, and scratch our ass when it's donuts and grin when nothing is funny. And I hate to be so bold, not bold, but I hate to be so arrogant about it, Joe. Okay, and not trying to be funny because he's not hearing our words. And now he says, hey, it's not going to happen. Well, hey, man, check this out. Look at Los Angeles in 1992. Yeah, it's going to happen, Joe. It's gonna happen, okay?
I
want someone on your charge
to not use this.
I mean,
the case for the opposition can be. He has a big forum.
Okay,
he
all my sides. We're gonna bring on in 1 second. Go ahead, Mr. Akbar.
He has a multitude of forums to plead his case. This is to plead the case for we the people, and I hope that is why we came here tonight, my man.
Right.
Oh yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay, now, okay, so Joe Gibson, you got the floor for a minute. He says it's not going to happen. Okay, and then we're going to get to you, Sarge, Joe. Okay, why is it not going to happen, Joe?
Because, first of all, you want your own country, your own land all over the several states of America. What are you talking about? Where's this land originate?
Oh, he's damn right.
What land are you talking about?
Okay, Joe, because our blood was shed on that land, Joe.
So was my blood.
Yeah,
so was my blood shed. Your blood wasn't shed. I mean, what blood?
No, oh,
your
yes,
blood.
It was.
What are you talking about?
Okay. I'm going to tell you, Joe. Okay, Joe. Hold on. I got to meet Joe out, okay, because, see, Joe was trying to throw in a fence. Okay. Is that my ancestors slaved on the plantations of Alabama, okay? You see what I'm saying? And Montgomery, Alabama was the cradle of the Confederacy. There's a whole lot of black blood that was shedded on that land. In fact, and I believe down in Antuco County, and tell me, Mr. Akbar, if I'm right, where they got the museum there of hanging the pieces of wood that signifying each and all the ones of the lynchings of our people down there in Alabama. See, Joe, this is the issue that you don't address. Now, Joe, you stated that, you know, you sitting on a stack of guns and all this old type of stuff at your place, you know, when you insulted our producer right here. To quote an old saying from South Central L.A., Joe, when you got your gun, they didn't quit making them, man. Now,
right.
We would love to have a peaceful solution, you see what I'm saying? But it's quite obvious with the mindset that is going through the fervor of this country of the dump, as in human shit, okay, and the panties, okay, you know, the weird dude of Florida, the panties of this critical race theory, okay. You see, Joe, only thing that what that shit is doing is as antagonizing people. Man, you ain't serious about sitting down having no peaceful discussion about this, man. What you doing is, Joe, just like the dump, as in human shit, and then just like the panties, is that you just looking for some nigga out there on the side of the road like they did Mr. Laval down there in South Carolina, like what they did to Mr. Bird down there in Texas, dragging that man all down the road.
No, Joe Gibson. That shit is coming to a stinking halt, man. That's what's happening with that, Joe Gibson.
From Italy.
Yeah.
It was dealing with Mussolini and totalitarianism.
Okay. Now, old Joe Gibson here, he put an insult in here. You're taking your knowledge from a guy that says if you wake up with earwax and a double piston. Okay, well, see, Joe Gibson, what you're doing is pissing on our heads and telling us it's rain. Your mic is on muted, Joe. Okay, and keep in mind, Joe, I got all your comments right here. Okay, now go ahead, Joe. You got something to say, then we're going to give it to Sarge, and then we got to give it to Sarge, and then, of course, you're going to definitely
you make it like I'm coming here groveling, looking for a peace conference or something. If you don't want to have a rational discussion with common sense, then you're right. There will be never no peaceful solution. And like the man said, it will be suicide.
Okay,
you know, what you want to do.
Okay, Joe, hold it. Okay, but hold on, Joe. But just like the Japanese of World War II with the kamikazes, okay?
Well, forget the Japanese. Let's talk about today. Forget the Japanese. Forget it. Talk about today. Today.
I am talking about today, Joe. This is why white society, through social media, wants black people to go out there and kill themselves. This is why they keep the black community infested with drugs. This is why even when you had said it on your show, how, you know, your clubs members go up there, put guns on the south side of Chicago and central L.A. and sit back and laugh and watch all these black folks kill each other. This is the reason why we have stated with Brother Che on this platform for years, Joe, is this is why we got to get our children up out of your damn Eurocentric public indoctrination centers, man, is because, see, that there is where
nobody's
that bullshit
you.
Is planned.
Nobody's stopping you.
And
brother.
I yield.
Nobody's
okay.
stopping you.
Oh.
What do you mean by that?
Okay.
What do you
no,
mean
I'm
by
not
that?
Stopping you.
Stopping
how
you.
Am I preventing
yeah,
you from doing that?
The white supremacist.
I'm not holding you back.
No, see, Joe, when you sit up there and make statements, like calling our producer here a boy, okay, what do you, okay, Joe,
exactly.
Well,
when
you make statements and put me down and insult me and where I come from, of course I'm going to stick up for my
Joe. Okay, hold on, Joe. But how did I insult
I've never,
you?
I have not said nothing out of the way tonight
did I
at all. And I've got nothing but insults here.
Okay. Okay, well, I didn't insult you.
Yes,
okay.
God damn it. Knock, knock. Who's there? Yeah, we know you there.
Oh, wait a minute. Sarge. Yeah, Sarge. Okay, Sarge. We're letting you
My
Sarge.
Goodness. Man.
Okay.
All right. Jesus. Okay, look, guys. Look, I'm not here to be antagonistic. I'm here to ask questions. Really, I'm a mechanic.
Sure.
I'm a nuts and bolts kind of guy. Now, based upon what
okay.
I've been recently hearing, I am not at all sure whether you're talking about a metaphorical nation or an actual nation or a collection of people working in a cooperative venture. I'm not sure at all. Now, look, I'm not looking for a detailed constitution. I just want a broad outline of what you're trying to accomplish, and based on what I've heard, it is utterly unclear. So let me ask some questions here. First of all, when you make these statements about the American Revolution, okay, look, guys, I'll get right to the point. When you make these allusions about the American Revolution, remember, the American Revolution was in genesis from the end of the French and Indian War to 1776. It didn't happen overnight. And when it happened, the Continental Army and the militias that supported the Continental Army were formed from the self-governing colonies that already existed on the eastern seaboard of what would become the United States. It didn't just happen overnight.
Okay, not so.
Okay, so there were again,
okay,
I want to emphasize this. There were self-governing colonies that already existed. It was about them maintaining their ability to keep governing themselves largely of Great Britain without representation in Parliament. That's what it was all about. So I'm asking you here and now, when you're saying these things, Are you speaking of a metaphorical nation? Are you speaking of an actual nation? How can this nation be constructed within the boundaries of the United States that has the United States Constitution that gives most of the territory to the sovereign states who grant charters to cities and to counties and everything else? You have to get a charter to have a city. You got to go to the state legislature, and you got to get a charter. Now, if you don't do that and you call yourself a government, believe me, the authorities are going to crack down on you right then, right there. How is this going to be accomplished?
Okay, Can I say something?
The Parsons.
Yes, sir.
This is El Ziga. Can I say something?
Go ahead,
yes,
brother.
I just want to say
the question to your – I got a question to your question, and that is I'm from Savannah, Georgia. My mom's from New Bern, North Carolina. New Bern was one of the first colonies that was established in the United States, like you're talking. So that's where my family comes from. That's where it originated from. And so with that being said, I'm African-American. You know, my family roots come from that type of family towards that side. So my thing is you really can't look at the way that you don't know what's going on or you don't know what's happening in that type of situation because – the African Americans and stuff all grew up in there when the first colonies first was established there. So the thing is, you don't want to see the issues that were going on.
That's
all I got.
I'm asking for an answer, which I have not yet gotten. No one seems to be able to answer my question.
That's
Sergeant just simply acquired the
land. I am asking questions to which I have yet to receive an answer or even an approximation of one.
Calm down. Inside voice, sir.
I'm asking very relevant questions.
You just simply buy the land, Sarge.
Can you wait?
I just told you, Sarge.
Let me paraphrase what you said. You said that your ancestors came from one of the first colonies in the United States in North Carolina, and therefore I should know what you're talking about. No, that doesn't tell me what it is you're talking about here.
I'm trying to understand how these mechanisms are going
to be established and created. I'm a nuts and bolts kind of guy.
So you do it again, right? Yeah, like this is the first place that black people have ever tried to govern.
I'm still not getting an answer.
New Bern, North Carolina was the first established colony in America.
Right.
All right, and what did it eventually become? It became part of the original 13 colonies that became the original 13 states of the United States.
You just listen here real quick. Black people built that, okay? Whatever you took over on the 13 colonies.
Am I ever going to get an answer to any of my questions?
Black people built those colonies.
And that still doesn't answer my question.
Am I wrong?
You're talking about creating a new nation.
Black people not build the colonies? Did you so
okay, see, I'm not getting an answer, obviously. I'm just not going to get an answer.
You're not getting the answer that you want. You're talking about creating a new nation and not telling me how this is going to be accomplished. Control yourself, Sarge.
I'm asking you to tell me your vision.
If you would just calm down before you have a little heart attack, maybe people could get to that. Calm yourself. Calm down. Inside voice. Deep breath. Jesus. There's obviously methods if we have to go with what's already established by them. But you just keep in mind that foundational black Americans is what built that. So you can't act like that we can't do it or we don't know how or we haven't experienced it. Just remember, they have been taking over and running off with our shit.
And you designed it too, right?
So we
you
can
designed
do it.
It and get everything, huh?
Goddamn right. How could you do that?
If you were kidnapped and brought over here, like you claim.
Because we're intelligent. That's how we did it. You educated yourself just to build buildings and cities and towns. You just remember, you're a tether and you don't get to speak. You owe reparations. So just remember that.
I will not pay a dime from my
and you can learn here what you want to learn,
Joe.
Right? Your people came from the
Okay, and Joe, is that we gave the world the concept of geometry while the European was living in caves, crawling on all fours, eating raw meat. They didn't even know how to wash their funky
ass. Where do you get this from? Where are you getting this from?
Okay, Professor George G.
My mom lives there.
Okay, Professor George G. Johnson.
The original man was from Adam. Okay.
All right. Are you
don't know what you're talking about. Yeah.
I don't even know why we're listening to an anchor. You're illegally. You're tethered here.
In America.
I'm not going to let you
go. Your nicknames are silly. Really.
Tether anchor baby. Where do you get your
There you go. You see, now, you see, Shabaka, now if I come back and I call a name, that means I'm bad, I'm a racist, I'm no good, right? And I get muted, right?
What name would you call Joe? You don't call me no anchor, baby. I'm not no anchor, baby. You know my name. Hold on, Joe. I don't call you no names. Okay, but hold on, Joe.
Go ahead, Joe. I'm impervious to pain. Go ahead.
Okay, Sarge. I see your comments, Sarge. We're going to have you back in a minute.
Remember, Joe, it was your reason.
I would like an answer like Sarge wants. How do you intend on...
I created my race.
Regardless of what you created, whatever you say you created, how are you going to rebuild a nation for yourself? Where is this land going to be acquired from?
Oh, simple. Okay, just have to acquire the land in the South, Joe. You see what I'm saying? And parcel it together. And Mr. Akbar just told you that right there. Now, Sarge, I see you, Sarge, in the chat room. Now, Sarge says that he was not kidnapped, and neither was any one of y'all. On this line, I'm a natural-born citizen of the United States. I was not kidnapped from Africa. Well, hell, Sarge, like Malcolm X says, hell, man, you left your mind in Africa. That's what happened. Okay. And I'm going to tell any of these brain-dead Negroes that. Okay. And it's not a bad thing. I'm saying that.
Oh, what are you going to call
See, and then, you know, and, okay, and
yeah,
then on top of that,
thing.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And
go
then
ahead,
on
say,
top
Joe.
Of that, then,
please,
Joe, and Sarge, and keep in mind that Manson Muse's brother, and also, too, Mr. Akbar has a great deal of knowledge on that. Manson Muse's brother, okay, Abu Bakari, he had left Manson Muse as the king of the Songhai Empire as he circumnavigated the globe. Not that drunken, stinking, nasty bastard by the name of Columbus who did not know how to wash his ass. Okay?
That's not history, Sambaka. That's a factual narrative. Who was the original creator of Islam, the Nation of Islam? What was his name? The white guy? What was that white guy's name? First, the founder of the Nation of Islam in America?
I'm talking about Abu Bakr. And also, too, and I'm talking about the great scholars, you know, Joe, at the University of St. Croix that sits in a place called Timbuktu in Mali, okay? For you to get your Ph.D. degree there at the University of Timbuktu, man, or the University of St. Croix in Mali, that was 12 years. To get your bachelor's degree was 6 years. To get your master's degree was 8 years. This is where the navigation came from. This is where studying the constellations came from when the European was sitting up there in the cave.
If you had all this empirical knowledge at this time, how did you end up as slaves?
Because we trusted you fools when you first landed on our shores.
You trusted us.
See?
Oh, you trusted
because
us.
Because you put your chains on your ankles and everything. You wrangled us.
So what? You still perverted the situation by taking motherfuckers out of the way, bringing them wherever you wanted. And not only that, that's the history that school wants us to learn, right?
But
they didn't tell the whole history. They don't tell the truth. They just tell what white people want to make them feel better, not the truth.
I don't think so. I think what it is that you don't have a piece of the American dream, so you're mad and angry. That's your problem. You're upset and angry, which I understand.
Upset. You know what I'm upset about is that your race perverted and raped my beautiful black sister's dream a lot of, and it caused a great sense of confusion, okay, amongst us.
You can feel good about yourself that way. That's fine. But the facts are the facts.
That don't make me feel good about myself. You know what makes me feel good about myself? Is pointing out white supremacy all day, every day. And try to stop it out like a fucking bad cigarette. No white
people. Here you go. Now the true nature of what you're trying to get at is coming out now. Again, you're not going to conquer anything. You've lost already. You've lost the war. You've lost.
The only way to stop.
You lost.
The only way
one mic on the system, then comment.
Stop white supremacy in all nine levels of all nine areas of human activity is to destroy white supremacy.
What area of human
activity? Can I say something? Let me tell you something. I want to say something real quick. The white people know that they're lost already, and they know that they lost the war already, so they want to make it tough and difficult already for everybody else. And so that's the reason why they came across.
What war?
No. You try to say that she was lost already. I'm just saying that y'all know that y'all lost already in y'all hearts. Now y'all want to trick her. Y'all want to try to make it bad for the
I've
black
lost
people.
I've lost nothing.
That's all I got to say.
I've lost nothing. I pray every day to start quiet in this country. I'm ready to prepare for you.
You already lost.
I
want to make it tough for everybody else.
I got my land here. Nobody's coming in and taking my land from me.
Brother, you're correct.
It doesn't matter
you're
what
right,
you
brother,
got
you're
in your heart.
Right.
In your heart, you don't have heart.
I don't have no heart.
Why do you think we used to sing?
You don't know who I am. I stood up against the brotherhood and the nation when I was inside
the
maximum security prison.
We always will.
We know
that. How plain is that?
I put a buck 50 across the guy's face in the A block and sent him to my prison and he snitched me out. So don't tell me about heart.
Absolutely.
Tell me about heart.
No, you're right. He's poor.
You want to try to take the heart because you ain't got the heart.
I debated with racists like you. Inside the prison. I checked you guys into PC. I checked you guys into protective custody in the prison, okay? So you don't know what you're talking about.
That has nothing to do with this.
The book written about it, pal. Read the book.
Yeah,
in 1994 when I blew the whole compound up and checked the whole brotherhood and nation into protective custody. So don't give me that crap. And the Muslim population. So you had no heart. Your people had no heart. I remember that.
Medicaid. When did that ever happen?
When did that happen? 1990.
What are you talking about? Where was that?
Yeah, what's
called?
Let's put that record in for you. How about looking
Northern,
at
Northern?
Yeah.
Northern Supermax Prison, Osborne Prison. I can't speak. You know, I got to yell over you. First of all, there's a book written about it. It's called Behind the Wall by Joel Hyde. There's documentation. Can I speak? There's documentation in the book. There is transcript in the book. You just asked me a question. You want me to answer the question?
Yeah,
go ahead, please.
I got documentation of it. Everything I say.
What compound, though?
Okay, explain it. I want to know exactly what happened.
I'll put the link in the chat room. I'll tell you what. And then just, all right?
What is the goddamn name of the compound?
I'll put it in the book. I'll put it in the chat.
Okay. Now, some of the smoke to clear. Just a briefing. Appeasing Mr. White is not going to get him off the hook. for reparations or any self-determination by the righteous freedom fighters of this hour. But nevertheless, I want to allude to a portion of the history. Birmingham, Alabama has produced some of our brightest and best in the person of Angela Davis, in the person of the Honorable Nat King Cole, who was and Nat Cole comes out of that seed, and he was beaten and we acquired together, beaten to death in Birmingham over just singing the song, and the white folks attacked him. The white woman jumped up and symbolically wringed out her panties, and they attacked him with wood, stone, everything they could beat him with. And the rest of his life, he was a chain smoker and never came back to the 100. But Condoleezza Rice is from it. He's an accomplished musician person, a Secretary of State type person, a brilliant historian, and many other things there. But Birmingham, the history of Dr. King in Birmingham, leaving Atlanta, I wish you would mute if you could. Can you mute out? Brother Shane Cole, can you do that line at point? I know it's not coming from my line. I know it's not on
your line. It's not coming from mine.
So somebody's doing rap, rap, rap. And that sounds horrible when people say,
I think it's
not
my line.
Can anybody stop me?
Not me.
As it ended, the windmill has ended. But
yeah, whoever's breathing into the phone.
Birmingham, I would challenge everyone online.
Yeah, exactly.
There's someone trying to sabotage the show. Okay, thank you. Everybody mute yourself to speaker. Can y'all do that? You can find enough discipline to get some of this together. The bottom line, in Birmingham, the Honorable Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Made like a mini pilgrimage, and he saw on the road there was so much tyranny. And he brilliantly found ways and with some divine help was able to go into Birmingham and from there go into Montgomery and from there go into Selma. And now it wasn't on a peacekeeping mission, although he stood up and spoke for peacekeeping ways. There was violence perpetrated against him and his followers in the way of putting the water, not just Bull Connor alone, those that threatened and beat after investigating on the ground and meeting Rosa Parks there and other people. And the mother of the one that, when you see that symbol in the middle of the streets of Birmingham, there's a dog with his teeth out into the gut of a 16-year-old boy. And his teeth graze the stomach line, the intestine lining, and the young man had to have a colostomy bag the rest of his life. And I met with his mother.
No, no.
And met him. That story saddened me to the point that I had to follow the trail. It drove me to follow the trail of Dr. King into Chattanooga, into Knoxville, Tennessee, Nashville, and eventually Memphis, Tennessee. And that's the big prize. Memphis is way in the west part of the state. You got to really be going after something. If you leave anywhere like Washington, Atlanta, or nearby Houston, Miami, or Chicago, L.A., if you land in Memphis, Tennessee, you had a real reason to go there. And by the time you get back to Atlanta, D.C., I know your life will be changed dramatically if you go in for the history of King and what he did on the ground in those spots to change the dynamic that you just have a way to drink out the goddamn water fountain or sit on a park bench that was marked for whites only or not just to use the bathroom in a dignified place in those spots. And then if you look the white man in the eye over that issue, then you could be, that white man could write you up and take it down to the clerk and file on you and come back with a charge of reckless eyeballing. Or if you laughed at the white man said something funny, you bust out laughing in public and you weren't near what they call a laughing barrel, then you were punished severely and could be potentially lynched. And if you had a little land, they might burn up your crops. If you had a church, they'd burn your church, bomb your church. Dr. King was asked the question, why did they, you know what I'm saying, bomb baby girls in the church? He said, because you failed
And he's talking to black people in general, including me and you and everybody that didn't do it. You failed to organize and structure the principle that he gave you. And they bombed baby girls in the church. And these things have been done to us because we did not have a military or a peacekeeping force or some form of a security force to protect our women, children, and our businesses. And that is why I speak so encouragingly. And I hope you would stop the noise if you can, if you discipline yourself enough to cut the noise for a split second. Yes, that's very, very disrespectful, whoever's doing it. So I'm going to ask you to mute out. Can you mute your line while I'm speaking, sir? It's just a kind of...
Yeah, that is on me.
You don't have to.
Yeah.
We've muted you out. Our people were in a transformation from the worst treatment of any people on earth. You just don't see when we talk Tulsa and Rosewood, we're talking about somebody bombing you because you had made the accomplishment of having your own business and having your own home. And they just didn't want to see you with it. They didn't want what you had. They just didn't want to see you with it. So they moved to destroy your crops, your houses, your churches, and your businesses. And they got the U.S. government to co-sign on that. The local government in Tulsa County signed off on it. And the city of Tulsa signed, and the state of Oklahoma signed off on that. To do this to black people, specifically to black people, because you are black, because you are melanated. And this is what we are saying to you, the brother who keeps saying, well, didn't everybody get enslaved? Wasn't everybody in the indentured service? No, the most backward people ever would work off the terms of indenturement and immediately try to run out and become a slave master. Once they were free, they could go and take you hostage and become your straw boss and make you, they were slave makers and slave breakers, and the idea of breaking your will and your resistance to be free. They didn't allow you to have chocolate because they felt you would run away and run back to Africa. And if they caught you doing something, they disputed over it, then they would punish you, torture you, and then lynch you, cut out your testicles, cut out your penis, and then pickle that and eat it as aphrodisiac to have sex with a white man with his white wife. These things have been done to us, brother and sister. And I say that we make sure we are the insurance policy. That is never, never. And I'm saying to you that Professor Henry Louis Gates, Skipper Gates, the salt and pepper of 40 ounces of beer at the White House, Professor Henry Louis Gates, one of the most brilliant men in the state of Massachusetts, if not the most brilliant men within miles of the state of Massachusetts, and all the white officers knew who they knew about this man. But they lured him out of his house and took him into custody anyhow, right? President Barack Hussein Obama was so upset, he said they behaved stupidly. So they went back to Webster and couldn't find the word stupidly. So they charged him with using not the proper usage, being out of line. The grammar police beat up on Barack Hussein Obama. But nevertheless, he invited them to the White House. They came to the White House. He gave them the 40 ounces of beer. And then Henry Louis Gates went to the conference. They went to a press conference and closed it. But then Henry Louis Gates went on to another press conference in Atlanta and said, I'm going to appeal to you today. Is there a way that will y'all help me to go across America to see to it that this never happens to a black man again? And there was not one organization or individual ready at that time. And I'm telling you tonight, brother and sister, I believe we're ready now to go to across America to make sure this stuff never happens to us again. We should be all saying together, never, 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 ever again.
Never again.
When they gave me the statistics in Tulsa, Oklahoma, they told me 300 people had been massacred. And I didn't really question it. I just went on the investigation. As I investigated it, now I'll find today's update as there were well over 3,000. You can't trust. There is no integrity in the current U.S. government. There's any number that you can trust coming from the opposition at this hour. I'm giving it to you live, brother and sister. I'm appealing to you out of sincerity. to come with your own self-government. According to the Honorable Dr. Frederick Douglass, he said to find the peacemaker and then organize against the warmongers, but position yourself in a manner that you would defeat the warmongers. He said to organize, again, against the opposition, namely the goddamn white man, but organize against the opposition. And he went on to say to find discipline, and then you soldier on the line tonight, organize against undiscipline and invite them to discipline, to military structure and discipline and community life and government life. We just want a decent life without the threat of the opposition to move on us and get it co-signed by the government and give you a no process the case when they kill your son. We want a guarantee of that. And I'm telling you straight up, the Honorable Dr. Frederick Douglass, when he was talking to Harriet Tubman, said, he said, Harriet, now you should avoid your exclusion, huh? But then when you have full participation, then you have full participation in your own black government. He did not assimilate you to go into a burning house. He did not organize you to go into a burning house, but into your own self-government. We said, whose street? Our street, right? You chanted that before somewhere. Whose street? Our. But then look across and say, whose land? Our land. And Lincoln had borrowed some of that land off of the estate of Nat Turner, the estate of Harriet Tubman and others, and the estate of Frederick Douglass as he was growing. Huh? Even while many of the brethren, again, were under a strange and peculiar form of enslavement, he still did the Django moves. Fred Douglass was a living Django. He just don't realize. Yeah. When the slave master caught him for running, right? And he ran, he caught him, boom, and whipped the skin off the backside of Frederick Douglass. Mm. When he got a break, he ran again, and they caught him and whipped the skin off the backside of Frederick Douglass. Oh, but in that last one, he ran and ran. He thought he got away, and they caught him again. But this time, when that slave master read that whip back to whip Frederick Douglass had become so, what he did those penitentiary push-ups, huh? That man was talking about penitentiary. And he caught the whip in the midair, and he took the whip from his slave master. Come on, huh? And whipped the skin off of his slave master, and he took his freedom, and he walked in defiance of the opposition, in defiance of the white man, the rest of his living days on earth. As a living result of that, Frederick Douglass has the most strategic home at this hour, the most strategic place in the Washington, D.C., we call it Banneker Town here, is the home of Frederick Douglass. It's still the most strategic place. He overlooks the whole township. The White House is not positioned. The Capitol is not positioned like the home of Frederick Douglass, to see the whole thing, the whole enchilada. So I'm just saying to you, freedom, when you take your freedom and manage your hand, I don't care what the opposition is. I don't care how big their army is. You take your freedom and manage your freedom for yourself. Because when Abraham Lincoln met Frederick Douglass, that was the whole piece, that Frederick Douglass met Abraham Lincoln. But it was at a place. Today they call the Supreme Court, yes, the Supreme Court, and right between there is called the Library of Congress. That's where he met Frederick Douglass, the honorable place. But at that time, it was a tourist home. In other words, the so-called whorehouse is where Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln met in Washington, D.C. These are facts. And I'm here to tell you that Abraham Lincoln was just – Abraham Lincoln was a backwoodsman from Springfield, Illinois. He got refinement when he talked to Frederick Douglass. And Frederick Douglass was written down as an illiterate man, but he was higher than all the intellects of his time. Oh, this is how divine promises work. I just wish you would latch on to a portion of what Frederick Douglass did. And when he whipped that slave man, took his freedom, and that was symbolic of all freedom for all of us. But they had to fight a civil because the Confederates bucked, the rebels bucked on it. And he barred that land and was giving that land back to the true owners. We were the owners of that land. On my property today, yes, part of the Harriet Tubman estate, part of the estate of Nat Turner. This is our land, straight up and down with no chaser. Our land. But the thing is, the Emancipation Proclamation, this is very important for you. I wish you'd hold your mic for a second. The Emancipation Proclamation was signed off by Lincoln, but it never got enforced because they assassinated him. And this is what all of the historians have failed to tell you, is that a man named Andrew Johnson got in power. Andrew Johnson is to Abraham Lincoln what Lyndon Baines Johnson is to John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And I'm standing here telling you straight up and down that he vetoed nearly the entire Emancipation Proclamation. And he stopped you from getting your land, your mules, or anything else that was coming in the form of reparations. And the physical manifestation, the total social reincarnation of Andrew Johnson is in the person of Donald Trump.
Right.
Some say it's in the person of Joe Biden or Joe Biden. But it's in that all of these crimes are together. I'm here to tell you that. And
Baca, we're down to the last 4 minutes of the show.
All right, okay, let's start our closing comments. And I'll go first. Great show tonight. This is one of the best that we ever had.
All right, we're going to go.
Joe Gibson still with us.
Joe, what is your closing statement?
Yes.
Go ahead, Joe. What is your closing statement?
No closing comments. Just thanks for having me on the show.
All right, thank you for coming, Joe.
Hi, Sarge.
Oh, yeah, now you know we got to give Sarge a little extra time. You know, Sarge got a lot to say.
Hi, Sarge.
Hello?
What is your closing?
Yeah, Sarge, go ahead. Go ahead and comment.
Oh, okay. Closing comments. Yeah, I really seriously wanted an answer to my question. Like I said, I didn't need a great deal of detail. I just wanted a broad outline as how this government would be instituted, administered, and managed, and how the any conflict with the provisions of the United States Constitution would be reconciled. And I never did get an answer. And one of these days, I would like to hear what that is. Again, I don't need a great deal of detail, just a broad outline. I would like to hear it. I didn't get it. Maybe next time I will. I'm curious.
Oh, God. All right, Joe. All right. But Akbar.
Now, let's see. And I will land my plane, but I'm just here to tell you, there's much of what Brother Akbar has to give you that will get you free at this hour. And I'll land in black power and a strong black military, the black that goddamn call, black power.
Power. Thank you, brother.
Okay, I'll wait.
So I guess I'm going to close it out. Thank you all for tuning into this episode of Baca's Black Experience Enhanced. Sarge, to answer your question, that should not be discussed in front of enemies. So that there is a plan, but we're not going to disclose that in front of the open enemy. But, yeah, on probably another platform, we will be discussing that where it's just us. You can't have conversations like that with the enemy ever present. With that being said, stay dangerous, stay empowered. We will win. Regardless of what Joe has to say or any of those that think like him, we are going to get our reparations, and it's long overdue, and it's a debt that's owed. It's not a handout. And we are at war, black family. It's time we start waging back. Do for self. That's all we stress. Do for self. Become self-sufficient on all four factors of production. We can have all that and then some if we get paid what is rightfully ours, our reparations, $100 trillion. For past, present, and future atrocities that have been brought against our people and continue to be brought against our people in 2023. Free all political prisoners, and we need to replace this global system of racism, white supremacy, with a system of justice, which guarantees that nobody is mistreated by the color of their skin, and those that need the most constructive help get it. So, peace, love, light, reparations, and separations, and black empowerment. Make sure you check us out on our other platforms, Frontline Black News, The Revolutionary Agenda, Frontline Black News every Saturday at 10 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, The Revolutionary Agenda, periodically throughout the week, and Shabaka Black Experience Enhanced on Friday for Grand Risings with Shabaka at 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. So peace, love, light, reparations and separations, and Black empowerment. Thank you to everybody that called in. Shout out to the anchor man. Ramel Understanding is his birthday today. We appreciate him. Brother Tyrone, we also appreciate him. Of course, our brother Sheikh Akbar, All Day Black Power. Sarge, you too. We appreciate you too. And Lady Che, definitely. And whoever else I didn't get to name that called in tonight. We appreciate all y'all. And feel free to call back any time, including you, Joe, you tether anchor baby. So we're going to go out with Ship Ahoy. Pay what you own, goddammit.
Right. Yep.